This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network, welcome back across the pond for episode number 12 of the Special Relations Podcast. We've got another excellent episode on tap for you for the next couple hours, and with a special guest that we've wanted on for a very long time. As always, I'm joined by my fellow goodwill ambassadors to the Place to Be Nation. First up is someone who we found out today, just as that he's now taken to spelling the word mum with an O, and would therefore probably fail Boris Johnson and his pal's new Britishness test. He's the host of Telly and Tea on the Pop feed, and Chicken Salad on the Wrestling feed, as well as being 1/6 of the Impact six-pack. He is Mr. Ben Locke. Ben, explain yourself.
Thanks, y'all, for being on the show, Callum. It's really good of you. I've got a little quote that I want to say, and it's a little joke for me, for the three of us, so apologies to everybody else. A great man once said, there's some sad things known to man, but there ain't too much sadder than the tears of a clown. Welcome to the UK, where we are tearing up beautifully at the moment. There you go, that's my little political rant for the day done.
Excellent. So you're just rebelling the only way you know how, by just changing all your spellings to be an Americanism.
Yeah. They Donald seems to know the way you have to do things, so you know I'm converting.
Oh, fair enough.
I've got time before this election to get in, haven't I?
a couple of weeks.
Oh yeah, that'll be fine. They'll let me in. That's no problem.
Oh, absolutely. Somebody who might not let you back in is our resident wordsmith. He is a man who's recently been told he hasn't to leave his house, not for work, not for errands, not for anything at all, which admittedly would have been nicer had the whole world not been told that at some point this year. He is the host of the wonderful senior video on the Wrestling feed, as well as being the Michael Corleone of the Wrestling 20 Years Ago crew. He is the quarantine dream, Rory McNamara. Rory, good evening.
Good evening. If you remember, everybody, when I did the introduction for this show last month, I think I said something to the effect of, we don't know how bad it's going to get. And once again, proved rather prescient, did it not? I do wonder if certain lever pullers actually listen to this program, because that is what happened. Yes, I am on my own very much personal lockdown at the moment.
Yeah, I would like to think that Dominic Cummins, when he was testing his eyesight by going on that big long drive, was listening to us. I feel like we could have kept him entertained whilst he was fighting the old Rona.
By the time he got from London to Durham, he would have got to what, match 90 in our GWE list, so would have done okay.
I think so. he was probably as perplexed that I didn't put the 2 out of 3 falls from No Way Out 2001 on it as anybody else.
You brought it up this time.
I did. It's probably better than bringing up Drew McIntyre. Oh, wait, I just did, what to you? Anyway. And finally, our special guest tonight is one of our longest serving fans, and someone whose comments confirmed to us that we weren't just talking to ourselves way back when we did episodes 1 and 2. His voice has been heard on our feeds for many years now, across all 4 of them, highlighting how boundless his knowledge really is, and tonight I'm glad he gets to impart some of it onto ourselves. Amongst other shows, you can normally hear him talking pop and talking WCW, but tonight he's just chatting with the chaps. Tim Capel, thank you very much for joining us.
Aw, that is the classiest intro I've ever received from anyone on any podcast. Thank you. And it is an honor and a privilege to be here with you gentlemen. Rory, your comment about we don't know how bad it's going to get, is really very appropriate. That is my motto, in fact, going into every podcast. So I would say strap in, because we're going to have a great time here, you and I, fellas. The listeners, frankly, I feel they're on your own, but I really enjoy being here, though, just to hear, just to be able to hear and interact with these voices that I enjoy so very much, usually when I am cooking at 3 o'clock in the morning, helps get me through it. But Ben, you're as posh sounding as I hoped, and Rory, I really enjoy your seniority, of course, and Callum, your Scottish sexuality is oozing through my speakers right now.
Well, thanks everyone for listening. I mean, that's just made the show for me. So, I mean, I can leave just now if you want, boys, and yeah. we can just wrap it up. That's as good as the show is going to get, I think.
Scottish sexuality. That is your new nickname.
Scottish sexuality.
Scott, when you're listening, that's a t-shirt.
Yeah, put that up on a tee public. Come on.
I can just see it just now, right on the homepage. It will be. just like the hot rod one, just yeah. that same way. Anyway,
get it in a 5x so you can really see it from from space, basically.
There you go. I think that's what we should do. Just see the things you can see from space, the Great Wall of China,
yeah,
the Great Wall of China, and a Place to Be Nation t-shirt.
Yeah. He's put them both up there.
Need to get it done.
Enormous cultural contributions of equal merit there, no doubt.
Oh, definitely.
I would think so. I mean, so you could put it on the moon. So the two things that are flying on the moon is an American flag by what's his face, Neil Armstrong, and then we can send somebody up.
What's his face?
What's his face?
I know.
You're mad.
Yeah. That guy walked on the moon.
Hey, look, a lot of us don't believe
you. He had a phrase. So. I can't remember what it was.
You ask a lot of people in this country, it never happened. So, I mean, yeah. To be forgiven, I guess.
Well, Tim, it is a pleasure to have you on. So thank you very much for taking time out of your Sunday afternoon to come and join us.
Pleasure is all mine. Thank you, gentlemen.
So, as we were saying, we have got a wonderful array of talking points tonight, and we had it all planned, and then good old Triple H and the NXT crew had to throw on a wee spanner into the works. They have announced coming up in a couple of weeks' time. It's actually this coming Wednesday, as this is going to be released the 28th of October. Of 2020, that we are actually going to have an NXT Halloween Havoc live from the Capitol Wrestling Center, aka the Performance Center, aka a big bloody warehouse. So since we have the preeminent, I would say, the preeminent WCW aficionado on the Place to Be Nation with us today, I feel that we should talk a wee bit about Halloween Havoc. So I'll just pass it over to Mr. WCW himself, Tim. Mm. What are your thoughts, your opinions on the good old spooky spectacular from WCW?
I think when you say the words Halloween Havoc, the first idea, first concept that comes to mind is disappointment.
Not what I thought you were going to say.
I realize maybe a bit blasphemous, me being the WCW fan that I am, but I think people should be mindful of the fact that I didn't really get into WCW until late 97. I mean, I was a a real late bloomer when it came to my WCW fandom. Of course, I've gone back and watched a lot of earlier shows, but in terms of being on the ground floor, like, my first Halloween Havoc was 1998, and there's a great podcast that you can listen to on, I believe that was making some chicken salad out of a show that was arguably chicken shit, Halloween Havoc 98. Thank you. You guys did a great job. I could not have appeared on that podcast and said anything any better than you guys did. Just a brilliant card on paper, and kind of shits the bed. Like, I still have some affection for it. I think there is some good stuff on that show. But really, it's a show of, like, squandered potential, I feel, more than anything, where it could have been and should have been so much more than it was. Of course, you have the following year's installment, Halloween Havoc 1999. Almost, if there's one show that, like, almost made me do the Seinfeld gif I'm out on WCW in just one fell swoop, it's like Havoc 99. That is, again, looks like this super card on paper. Like, really matches with a lot of great potential, a lot of star power, and pretty well-built feuds, honestly, going in. I mean, you had the very hinky Sting heel turn, which was never going to work, but it was what it was. Everything surrounding that, though, looked pretty good and pretty hot. And this ends up being the first pay-per-view booked, overseen, fully controlled by one Vince Russo. And, you know, there's all this speculation at the time period. What's that going to look like? Is he going to make a big splash? Is he going to be more behind the scenes and gradually take the range? Well, there was nothing gradual about it. He pretty much turned that show upside down. And his very Russo-ific fashion turned it into a real just crash TV style pay-per-view. Looking back on it and watching it today, it is entertaining trash in the way that any Vince Russo produced product is entertaining trash. But it's not good. You don't walk away with it with a good feeling or thinking that you made a good decision with how you chose to spend your time. That was a real dumpster fire, and I remember watching it live. I purchased that pay-per-view live, watching it and just hating it. Just like, it was just a steady decline, a cascade of failures is how I would describe that show as it played out live. My goodness. And yeah, by the time you get to Havoc 2000, the last Halloween Havoc, really. I don't know that I've even seen that entire show. I've seen matches from it, but I have never watched Halloween Havoc 2000 end to end. So anyway, those are kind of my memories growing up of Halloween Havoc, such as it was at the time. Now, there's a lot of great stuff, in earlier installments, which I'm sure we can reflect much more fondly on. But that's sort of my take. I never had a ton of good memories or affection for the name or the event itself. It's more of a learned experience of having any real, like, affection for it, I guess.
So what you're saying is that you're hoping for more of the same. So what I'm thinking is, given your previous experiences with Halloween Havoc, you're just expecting the full 2 hours to be Gargano against Ciampa again.
Yeah. Just throw that on there. Yeah, no. I mean, it's just a branding thing, like everything else they do, right? It doesn't make me think, oh, it's just like the good old days. Just whatever. Like this stuff never. When they brought back Great American Bash, it's, gosh, that was one of the, at the time, that 2004 revival was regarded as like one of the all-time bad pay-per-views, I believe. So
with good reason.
It's one that we might be considering in the future.
Right. So I mean, it's not like they do these things with any expectations that they're going to be reigniting this great tradition. I think that ship has sailed.
If you look at their track record, Great American Bash was anything but great. Starrcade has been reduced to an hour long special of highlights on the network.
Right.
Well, Clash of Champions is what it is. So they've not got a great track record to make you think that Halloween Havoc is going to be anything special in a couple of weeks. However, there are six words that I believe might actually make a viewer out of one Rory McNamara.
Mm.
And it's not battable, battable, battable. What would those six words be?
Wait, is that three words or six words?
Battle.
I'm not going to go back and count. Let's just say he was right, shall we? The six words he are talking about is, and everybody on the count of three, one, two, three, spin the wheel, make the deal.
Spin the wheel, make the deal.
Spin the wheel, make the deal.
Well done. I will have my Prince of Darkness match.
It might as well be a coal miner's glove match for all I care. So
yeah, I mean, it's fun.
You know they are going to try and do a coal miner's glove match just to be full of hilarity, aren't they?
That will be on the wheel, I hope.
Absolutely.
Just for, you know, I hope there's enough self awareness to put it on there. There's probably not enough self awareness for them not to choose it, however. But that's enough.
That's what I mean.
Well, what's the closest thing to that? Didn't they do God, this was forever ago. Like in,
I don't know what you're going to say here.
2003 with the Raw Roulette. Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
Yes.
Isn't that the same thing, basically?
Yeah. I always remember it was just an excuse to get William Regal to dress up and drag. If you remember the first or second one, was it not like a Las Vegas showgirls match, and it had just purely so William Regal could dress up like a Las Vegas showgirl and. Bloody hell, did he enjoy that?
Wow.
He's such a trooper.
Yeah, because he did it every time they were in Vegas, wasn't it? It was a whole, you know, casino roulette theme.
Oh, see, I've only ever seen, or I only remember seeing that first one they did, that I think they had a tag team ladder match was their main event. Mm. Which, I mean, was like treated as this big deal, great match at the time that no one remembers anymore. But yeah, that's, so they've kind of done this concept, if not the name.
Yeah, they I think they did it 2 years in a row. I think when they went to Vegas, they did it 2 years in a row, and then I think they brought it back years later. Okay. But I have found somebody has been a trooper online and has been through the wheel and has picked out the matches that are listed on the wheel. Gents, would you like to know what could be in store for us?
Oh, okay. I would love to.
So we have a blindfold match. Right,
on Rally Rory.
Always a winner.
Yep. A trick or street fight. Clever.
Okay.
Casket match. A biker's chain match.
A what?
A biker's chain. I think they had that. Okay. I think they don't have that one time. I don't know. Something on a pole. Right up Vendrizzo's alley. Devil's Playground match.
Ooh.
I mean, if that's anything like what was it called now? The one for WrestleMania.
The Prince of Darkness match.
Of course, the Prince of Darkness match.
Yes.
A boiler room brawl. Shotzi's choice.
Okay.
Something that sounds right from TNA. Weapons Wild match. Nice. Then we've got Buried Alive. Fair enough. Well,
one will hope that they are mindful to have a backhoe and, you know, dig a hole just in case. When they have egg on their face, if they're unprepared for that one.
Exactly. The last two, Coal Miner's Glove Match.
Yeah.
Of course.
And the main event, the one that I really hope we see, the Chamber of Horrors match.
Oh, boy.
I see what they did there as well.
Now, that would be, if any of those... I mean, could you imagine we had a two-hour show that had a casket, a Buried Alive, Chamber of Horrors, and another Chamber of Horrors?
Right, what if they're all Chamber of Horrors?
How many matches on the card are actually going to be Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal? Is it all of them?
I really hope it's all of them.
I kind of hope it's all of them, but they've only announced three matches so far, two of which are Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal.
Okay. So, as we record
it. So, it's, Gargano versus Priest and Candice versus My Darling EO.
Okay.
That gets an enthusiastic okay.
Well, you know one of them's going to be. Hang on. You know one's going to be Shotzi's choice, isn't it? That'll be one.
One would think if her name is an option that they will land on it. But hey, maybe they'll make the great decision not to gimmick the wheel, which produced the Coal Miner's Glove match.
Yeah, man, Johnny Gargano and Damien Priest are a Chamber of Horrors match. They have to find six other guys to stick in it.
Yes. EO and Candice in a Baker's Dozen, whatever it was called. Baker's Chain.
Well, the booker in me would say that the Garganos have to win because they didn't win the other match. And, you know, if you're going to carry on doing this Gargano way stuff, then they've got to win a match eventually.
Well, they might do. You know how Johnny loves to dress up? They could do a trick or street fight so he could come dressed as a pumpkin.
Oh, true.
Oh.
What was the other one called? Weapons Wild.
Weapons Wild, yeah. It's right out of... Jeff Jarrett obviously had a wee hand in that one because that's right out of TNA.
2005. Yeah, okay.
I thought you said Wet and Wild at first, and I was like... I don't know if we're going to get that.
Girls Gone Wild's making a comeback.
Yeah, yeah. Guys in sweatpants match. Kind of like a street fight, but you have to wear gray sweatpants instead of jeans.
Speaking of Halloween Havoc and costumes, sorry to bring it back. Obviously, I can't go without mentioning 97 and Rey's Phantom costume.
Okay, yeah, 97 Halloween Havoc is a banger.
Yeah, absolute, absolute top draw. Not Phantom, sorry, that was Rick Rude. That's such an easy confusion to make.
yes, Rick Rude was known as the Halloween Phantom. Rey was dressed as the Phantom, these somewhat superhero, but more of a pulp.
Oh, I did get it right. Sorry, I thought I got it wrong.
Yes, okay. Just different definitions of Phantom. Yeah, but yeah, that was that movie that came out, I think, the year before. So it was like an early superhero cosplay for him.
That Rude reveal might be one of my favorite things WCW ever did. Actually,
it is pretty good.
Almost ruined by friend, well, not a friend of the show, but everyone's favourite announcer, Tony Schiavone. if you remember, they go, oh, who is this guy? Who is this guy? And he goes, that's not a neckbreaker, it's a Rude Awakening.
See, I felt like that was meant to be like showing their hand a little bit to the smart fans or whatever. Without coming right out and saying it, like, okay, this is who this is. I don't know. I kind of add that bit of commentary sort of added to it for me.
But whose side is he on?
I was going to say it's one of those whose side is he on situations. Yeah.
Do we think there's ever? I mean, if you were to ask Eric Bischoff, as if anybody would ever deign to do that, but if you were to ask Eric Bischoff, he would tell you that Halloween Havoc was, at least when he was in charge, WCW's blue ribbon. Annual pay-per-view.
Their WrestleMania, yeah.
Do we ever... would we ever agree with that?
I mean, I was going to bring that up if you didn't. I'm glad you did. Because we all, I think, traditionally think of...
Starrcade.
Yeah, you think of Starrcade as the WCW equivalent of WrestleMania. But, and I think that was true throughout, you know, most of its existence. But you get to the, you get into those Bischoff Halloween Havoc years, and I mean, what do we want to really give? What do we want to really consider? Like, this is a Bischoff Havoc show. 95, certainly, right? I mean, say what you will. I just watched it. It's maybe the most talked about, not for the best reasons, of all the Halloween Havocs. It's kind of the most infamous, but a lot of shit goes down on that show at the end of the day. Especially compared to...
He wasn't in charge of creative, of course. As he will only be too keen to tell us.
I guess that's the line, but I would certainly put that down as a Bischoff show. I mean, 94 probably is as well. And fuck, that's Hogan Flair cage match, retirement match. Compare that to Starrcade 94. definitely give it to Havoc year.
I'm not allowed to talk about WCW 94 anymore, Tim.
Very good.
Even thing it. Tony Schiavone says that Halloween Havoc for him was their biggest show as well.
He says it too. Okay.
He does. Yeah. He's always been a when it's all, when they would always do these ask Tony anything.
I've heard him say that too, and I think the reality is Havoc was their show that was going to look really stacked on paper, and Starrcade was kind of the show where they left that one trick up their sleeve, where you look at, again, 97, that Havoc great show. I think it compared to Starrcade, much better bang for your buck. But the one thing that Starrcade has going for it is Sting's return, the big match with Hogan, which is like the biggest match in all of wrestling. And you do hold off on that until Starrcade. But I mean, it's not like that Havoc is worse for it. You know what I mean? It's like, it's got the Hogan Piper blow off, I guess, sort of. A lot of other great, one of the best WCW matches ever, and Mysterio and Guerrero. The blow off to DDP Savage. I mean, there's a lot of Flair and Henning, right? Their first singles match after Henning turned. There's some major, major stuff going down on Havoc 97. Sting or not. And then you look at 98, and Ben, you guys covered this so very well already. Great looking show on paper, really stacked. The one thing that Starrcade has going for it is Flair's comeback. So it's like they hold off on that until Starrcade. But otherwise, not much going on. I mean, you have Nash and Goldberg, but you know, that's a big screw job. So, I mean, I guess it helps. It helps sell Starrcade, but it doesn't have the kind of star power or like quality of feuds as Havoc 98. When you compare the two, 99. I'm trying to think of what Starrcade 99 even was.
That's when your man Brett got retired.
Yes, so that's our main event, Brett and Goldberg. God, what else was on that show? Nash and Sid and their powerbomb match. Was that
the one with Benoit and Jarrett in the ladder, I'm thinking?
Yeah, it was supposed to be Benoit and Hall, but Hall flaked out, I think. Yeah, so it ended up being Jarrett. It's a pretty good match, but I mean, it wasn't the match that was advertised, right? So that's, you know, I don't know. I look at that 99 Havoc, again, similar to 98, in that there's really good stuff going in. Like, these are pretty hot angles that they had going on. It was like the main event was going to be another Sting Hogan. They're trying to push Sting as a heel. It's not working, but that's, I mean, you didn't see a lot of singles matches between Sting and Hogan. And they weren't ever anything to write home about, but that's still, you can sell a show on that easily, right? Just on the name value alone. DDP and Flair are in a pretty heated feud. Goldberg and Sid, which was like, holy shit, they're on this big collision course. Everybody wanted to see that match. This is Brett's first pay-per-view back after taking much of the year off. He's got a match with the Total Package. The Total Package is how he will be referred to henceforth, which, I mean, you don't expect much from that, but both of them were kind of making comebacks. So, I mean, strong card on paper that really just kind of shits the bed for Russo reasons. And, and by then, I mean, I guess Bischoff is out of the picture, so doesn't really matter what Bischoff's personal feelings are about this event by then. But I can see it. I mean, if that's his line, that Halloween Havoc was their marquee event, I do think it's supported by what he gave us.
I think it was definitely their most memorable event. Like, the way they did the stage and, you know, the colors that they used, it was totally different from the sort of black and white Attitude Era, you know, and even before then that the WWF was going for. They didn't use the same, they didn't really use the same color schemes. It was all, you know, the purples, the blacks, the, you know, the orange, a bit of gold, you know. I thought the sets were so well done, and like has been mentioned, some of the matches on there are, you know, I think that's part of the reason why they're so memorable, is because of the set and the stage that they're on.
Yeah. I did like the inflatable demon they had above the entranceway towards the late 90s. So cool. That was always a bit of a story wrestling 20 years ago. In 98, I don't mention this on Chicken Salad, Ben. In 98, it actually deflated 10 seconds after the show went off the air. absolute truth. You had all that issue with
as Goldberg. Did everyone's interest.
Indeed, allegorical indeed. Goldberg and DDP obviously not being shown to many pay-per-view viewers. Much like, I suppose, in a way, it's WCW's version of the power generator going out 30 seconds at the end of Barely Legal 97.
There you go.
A lesson for us all there. All true.
What do you think of the gargoyle brain? Well, I was just out back with it. She was fine then.
Good old Bobby.
I want to know why we don't have a monster truck sumo match option on the spin the wheel, make the deal.
Social distance.
An overindulgent two-hour monster truck fest.
Yeah. Why the work rate involved there would just be off the chain. Yeah, I mean, why are we discriminating against machine versus machine matches? I think this is very inappropriate.
Is there a river running outside the performance center?
Oh.
For somebody to safely fall into so they can turn up relatively unscathed just an hour later?
I mean, it's got to be. It's in Orlando. It's basically a swamp, so.
Let's face it. Ray's already fell off a building and lost an eye this year. He
lost two eyes. Quite
easy. Lost two eyes, sorry.
And he's fine.
I think it might be time for Ray to give it up. If he's, I mean, it's not worth it anymore.
On the contrary, I think he has incredible regenerative abilities now late in his career. Somehow.
It's a Netflix. That's a Netflix show waiting to happen.
Yeah. Well, he had that, what, that experimental like stem cell therapy or whatever, right, for his knees that apparently really worked miracles. Well, it's also regrown eyeballs and allowing him to take plunges off of roofs. And yeah, he's hanging a thing.
His son shows that, you know, the generations miss a talent as well.
Come on, poor guy. He's not even Ray's son either. Don't blame him.
Oh, yeah, sorry, good point. Sorry, Eddie. Sorry.
Yeah.
Come on.
Got you again, Eddie. Right, gentlemen, I need to take my leave now, I'm afraid. Turn into a pumpkin, if you will, to try to keep this very strange metaphor going. Duty calls elsewhere. But, of course, I will be back for Tim's Happy Place a bit later on. But, Tim, bear that in mind. I'm coming back especially for that. Pick a Rory friendly match for us to watch.
A Rory friendly match. Okay. I'll do it.
I think listeners will know what I mean when I say that. But everybody else, I shall catch you again later. Be good, everyone. Remember, I'm editing this show still. none of this cats away stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy the substandard thing you're just probably going to do just now.
wrestling 20 years ago or something. Paltry by comparison, isn't it? The slimmest of slim pickings. We're going to watch Unforgiven 2000, so draw your own conclusions.
Oh, I've seen your video.
He's good. Right, I'll see you all on the other side.
See you in a bit, buddy. All right,
Well, we will just keep chugging along here, guys, even if Rory doesn't have the same passion or want to continue that we do. He just comes in and talks about Halloween Havoc because he likes it, and then he'll come back and talk about Tim's Happy Place just because he thinks he can, just because he's a podcast legend.
Who does he think he is?
I have no idea. I have no earthly idea. I am having a change of mind whether or not I want to be... I won't have to be on this podcast anymore.
Ball bag.
Which will bring us to our next segment, which is our favourite things and changing of minds is the topic of the day, isn't it, Ben?
So going with the WCW theme and the Halloween Havoc theme, I want to sing the praises of a man who in recent years... has become a bit of a legend in the wrestling community. I think he was somebody who people liked before. I think he's now a man who people love. And I am, of course, referring to one Tony Schiavone. Mm. When I was a kid and when we had WCW back in the 90s, Tony Schiavone, to me, was just a competent announcer. I was always a WWF guy. So Vince and JR were always... you know, my boys when it came to commentary, even when, you know, I was a total mark until about, you know, 95, 96. I didn't know Vince was the owner of the company. I hadn't got a clue about that kind of thing until the curtain got peeled. But Tony, I absolutely think is fantastic now, not just through the podcast. I will say outside of Place to Be Nation, it is probably my favorite podcast out there of anything. Doesn't matter of any subject, doesn't matter if it's wrestling or whatever. Because he's such an engaging personality, the stories he tells, and also the fact that when those first few years of the podcast happened, he didn't think he'd be back in the industry, so he was willing to say whatever he wanted to say. It didn't matter. He wasn't bothered, you know, apart from going to conventions. That was pretty much his interest, wasn't it, outside that. But, you know, I've been watching those 93 Saturday nights. The chemistry he has with Jesse Ventura, it's absolutely off the page. And Jesse and Vince were brilliant together, Jesse and Gorilla, but Jesse and Tony are superb. And even I would say from the, you know, the first 3 or 4 years of him and Bobby before Bobby just went and started drinking and just didn't care. It's really good. And, you know, I know everybody got, you know, slags JR off and whatever, but him, Excalibur and Tony on AEW are also very good. I think they need to sort of pick a lane, and, you know, rather than having three play-by-play guys. I agree with that, but I don't think JR is as bad as what people make him out to be. But yeah, my guy who I wouldn't say I hated him, but I really didn't see what others seen him, what I love him now is Mr. Tony Schiavone.
People just remembered him towards the end of that WCW run being quite burned out. I won't say he was checked out. I do think that he remained engaged with the product such as it was. He just wasn't given very much to work with, right? He's just sort of doing the best he can with what he's got in front of him.
I think going back to something you said, sorry, Tim. I think going back to something you said, though, about being burnt out, you know, there was that period of time, wasn't he, when he was genuinely on at least two of the shows every week, wasn't it? Whether it was Nitro and Saturday Night or Nitro and Thunder, however you want to phrase it. And that, you know, 4 or 5 hours of television every week is going to burn anybody out.
Yeah, and Thunder was a live show at first. And remained live until they went to an every other week taping schedule, which was sort of unique. And then in the Russo years, I think they stacked it right on top of the live Nitro. But for that first 2 years, it was effectively doing 2 live shows a week, 4 to 5 hours. You know, these are 3-hour Nitros we're talking about, and plus pay-per-views, plus, gosh, was he doing... I don't think he was on Saturday nights by 98, because that was Hudson and Tenay, right? Yeah, I know Tenay and Hudson were on it, and that was, I think it was just a 2-man booth. But, I mean, he did Saturday nights for a while, so it's, you know.
And he did, for a while he had done voiceovers for Pro and Worldwide as well, so he'd be in the studio for however long that would take. And did he not have an office job as well?
Yeah, was it his office job, like head of? He says on the podcast, wasn't he like head of production or head of, you know, head of the commentary unit or whatever?
Yeah, he was essentially the head commentator. So he basically had them reporting up to him. Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember on the Bobby Heenan episode, he said like he had to do Bobby's review. Mm-hmm. But and Callum obviously know more about this period than I do, but one other partnership I want to mention is him and David Crockett, because Crockett's like this overexcited puppy dog, and Tony is basically just the straight man in this partnership, and it works so beautifully together. That tag match that we watched, Callum, like Tony is just like, just let David go.
he does really well, because David Crockett is just like, he's just acting like a fan every single match that he's on. He just goes mental, and he's acting like a fan, and then Tony's obviously using these, because obviously he is a professional sports announcer as well, so he's using that part of his skill set to bring it back and lay down the story and everything. But if you watch, he does all the interviews, or the majority of the interviews at the podium, and him and David Crockett, they just look as if they're having the time of their life.
Yes,
definitely.
It's Tony's the professional for sure, but you can still tell that he's a fan. Like he's got the biggest grin on his face anytime he's holding a mic in front of like a Ric Flair, somebody he knows is going to just go off and be incredibly extra in front of this tiny studio audience and deliver like an all-time promo, which is what Flair would do just week after week. And Tony loved it. It just loved it. So, and that kind of just, it's infectious, right? That comes through to you as a viewer. It makes you think, okay, if they're that into this, then I'm kind of getting into it too.
Oh, definitely, because it's I'm watching all of this for the first time, and you're looking at him going, he's feeling the same way I'm feeling about this. It's not put on at all. It is all genuine reactions, and he's absolutely superb. And to think, I think everyone and their time can be critical of Conrad Thompson in one way, shape, or form, but me especially. But
I was gonna say,
but
just a fan though, Callum.
Just a fan. Now, but regardless if he's a fan or he's a plastic flare, And that's saying something given who's around his table, Charlotte. However, the fact that if it wasn't for Conrad Thompson, we might never have seen or heard of Tony Schiavone ever again.
He was out.
If you listen to him, he was of, and you genuinely believe him when he says he didn't think anyone wanted to hear him, wanted him back on television. And if you, from going from there, from to then take the job with AEW to then you see him in a skit with Britt Baker and they're going for a facial or a manicure or whatnot, he's looking again as if he's having the time of his life. It is superb stuff. He was absolutely brilliant.
That's another great partnership, by the way. Him and Britt Baker. That's one we haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah. Well, and also just he's like a kid again, calling these matches and seeing moves that he never saw back during his time. Like, because the business has evolved so much in the, you know, effectively 20 years that he's been away. So he's like, "What's that move called? Oh, they really call it the Vader Bomb? That's so cool."
I
was going to say, I think that's the best thing about the podcast that I like, just, you know, just piggybacking on what Callum said. You know, the fact that when it started, he was this genuine outsider who knew a lot of the, you know, the old business, you know, and watching him go to where he is now. You would never think that was going to happen.
And I think he's the reason why JR might not be bad, because it's Jim Ross. He's not going to be a bad announcer. But he gets shown up by Tony Schiavone because Tony is wanting to... He's adapted to it. He's, like, praising what's happening on. He's genuinely getting involved in it, as opposed to JR just watching there going, "Oh, they didn't do that in my day. You never see Dan Hodge do that," and just completely shitting on it. Meltzer bomb. Fucking Danny Hodge would never do a Meltzer bomb.
Meltzer driver 99.
Sorry. Meltzer driver. Sorry.
We love Charlotte and we love the Young Bucks, yeah.
Lord, Jesus. All right, I will say this then, now that we're going in an anti-AEW leaning direction that, you know, gets my dander off a little bit. No, And this is something that I feel like it's an extension of AEW's entire approach, and you see that in their commentaries, that it just feels very authentic in its presentation. And Tony calling matches the way like a normal human being would watch wrestling and call matches, like, it would be annoying if it was just you and I doing it because we're not professionals and we're not going to be good at it, right? But this is something he has done his entire life. And at the end of the day, he is that fan. And they're allowing him to be a fan of what he's watching. It just has that... It has a natural quality to it that you compare that... Because inevitably, we have to compare these things. You compare it to the WWE, where everything feels so produced and so manufactured, so artificial. And it's like, setting aside how great like any individual match is today, like main roster, even NXT at this point, honestly, it just has such a distancing effect because it is so produced. It just feels so like something that's being served and presented to you, not just something that exists and you take it or leave it on its own terms. It's just so artificial.
It's overly manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite change of mind moment is Goldust, or Dustin Rhodes. If you remember, I put his comeback match with Orton on my GWW list because when I was a fan, started in 2001, I didn't know of Goldust. You look back, and so I had to look back on it, and it was like 1999, and he wasn't in a good state of mind, and you see him on TNA, and he's all right, and then, but he's then Black Rain.
Fat shit Black Rain.
Yeah,
he's Black Rain.
He's wearing a bin bag, and it's just So it's for then he has his good moments, and he has his good moments. And when he first comes back, so his tag team with Booker T, as short a run as that was superb. And then he goes away, and he does have a decent run on ECW, if you remember, when his third or fourth comeback, and he's basically put on ECW to drag guys like a very, very green Sheamus to a good TV match, and who else would it have been? Guys like Braden Walker and Eric Escobar and all your no-name guys, Ricky Ortiz.
Good Lord.
All your no-name guys to a good match and train them along the way. But his match with Orton was an eye-opener, going like that. Bloody hell, this guy is really, really good. He turns up, it happens out of nowhere, he turns up, he stuffs himself into... Have you ever seen the video of the attendants at a Japanese train station trying to fit people onto these bullet trains? they must have needed one of those guys to fit him into his bodysuit that night. And it bursts open and he's spilling out. I mean, that's the... it was X-rated, the amount of tit he had on show that night. But
the amount of tit!
He gets an absolutely superb match with Orton. And it's at that point I click and go like that. Now, this guy is really, really good. And then going back and you see, I've watched a lot of stuff of the mid-90s when he was in WCW, right? Like, he's feud with... What's his name? Robert Fuller.
Colonel Rob Parker.
Yes, thank you, Rob Parker. Yes.
Him of the biggest penis.
Right. Exactly. That's the point of reference you should have gone with. We would have gotten it right away.
That was the full once of our episode one was Robert his package.
His big package and the big package he left on the ring at Fall Brawl 94. Right.
Something busted inside him.
So it's at that point you look back and the guy has always been really good. The natural isn't a gimmick. The guy is just naturally talented.
Like when he had that match with Cody, I think that, I mean, I certainly, and I think a lot of other people perceived it as this is probably like a retirement match. This is, you know, a farewell match. And if anything, it just lit a fire under him. And
yeah,
he's been killing it since then. In his 50s, I mean, with no signs of stopping. So, man, good on him. Busting out Canadian Destroyers now on the ring apron. I mean, what are we doing?
And that's the thing about AEW. And they've got no Vince McMahon. They've got no shackles. So it's basically the guys are doing what they want.
Yeah.
Which is... It's sometimes they're doing what they want, but with no direction, which is sometimes a problem. But you've got guys like Dustin Rhodes, who by now would have been told, give it up, you're going to the performance center, you're going to become a trainer. He's like, no, I've got much more left to give, and my God, is he showing it.
It does help when your brothers are in the company and basically just says, book your own angles, mate. But when they're as good at a higher level as he's performing at, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, it's not like he's going, well, Cody, I think I'm going to win the title this week. You know, it's not as egregious as some of the other some of these other situations where nepotism just running wild.
if you look when the first thing he did was, okay, do your own thing. He was involved in the thing right at the very start with the Inner Circle. But then he starts going and he starts teaming up with Sonny Kiss because he can see potential in Sonny Kiss and he wants to bring them along. Then he's like, right, I'll open my own training school, but I'm not retiring to do that. I'll do that alongside what I'm doing just now. He's doing his best and he's doing his best in that way. So he's doing what he wants, but it's in no way selfish, which is a rarity in this profession.
Makes them better and more well known through association.
He really does feel like
he's giving back. Yeah, he wants to give back to the business is what it feels like.
Okay, Tim, who's your positive change of mind?
Okay, so I'm going to go with, I guess, a controversial pick. Chris Benoit, I mean, what did he really do? No. I keep telling myself I need to stop making those jokes. I mean, it really is terrible. I mean, I'm sorry.
I almost choked on my drink.
I'm so sorry.
Look what you've done to the poor man, Tim.
Yeah. So mine's going to be a quick one because it's not like I did like a total 180 or anything. It's not like I'm falling all over myself in praise of this person now. But I'm going to say, and all credit, honestly, to my tag team partner, Jennifer Smith, and her love for Kevin Sullivan. Because now hear me out.
No, I'm with you. Callum knows I'm with you.
I'm not saying that you know he was deprived of some great world championship run or something, right? Like he, you know, I think where he landed and his legacy in wrestling is about where it should be. Okay, and I think he topped out. Like he had a moderate to high ceiling, but he was never going to be like a main event superstar. There's just no way. But you look at his body of work, and I coming back into wrestling really in the late 90s, just kind of associated him with being the guy that Chris Benoit was constantly feuding with, for reasons that sort of eluded me. Like I didn't get the whole behind the scenes drama of, you know, life ultimately imitating art. I didn't know about all that stuff. I just saw match after match of Kevin Sullivan and Chris Benoit, and I'm like, what is the deal with this Kevin Sullivan guy? Why is he all over the place? Why is he seemingly only ever in matches with Chris Benoit? I didn't know the first thing about him. Like, I had never heard the name before probably 1997. And this is a guy who'd been in the business since, you know, the 70s. I just, not a household name, not somebody I really was familiar with at all. And then he goes out, he retires in 97. So I didn't have a lot of exposure to him and didn't have a very high opinion of him based on what I had seen. But having gone back and watched like all those Benoit matches, they're all kind of great in different ways. I mean, everybody talks about the lady in the men's bathroom, you know, moment at Great American Bash 96.
Six, yeah.
Yep. And they, people forget about, they had another really wild brawl at that Super Brawl, I think, of 97. And it's missing that real standout moment of lady in the men's bathroom. But otherwise, it's like it's got a lot going for it. If that's one you haven't watched in a while, if you are someone who is not terribly bothered by Chris Benoit matches, check it out. Of course, his retirement match, you know. But even looking beyond that, you go back into his early days, like, and in prepping for the Talking WCW episode that we did, which was very, very early in our run, I should stress, covering Kevin Sullivan. I was watching some of his work from Florida Championship Wrestling, and it is off the wall nuts. I mean, crazy cult devil worshiping shit. And it's like, this is in the 70s and they're putting this crap on television. And getting away with things that would have been controversial and really would not have flown like in the 90s. I mean, the stuff with Luna, where she comes in, she's playing like a news anchor or reporter and presenting somebody with an award kind of thing, and just gets sucked into this brawl that breaks out, and Kevin Sullivan just knocks the shit out of her. I mean, just pops her like right across the face. And it just looks, and it's one of those, like you hear her talk about that. And she was like, I told him to make it count, you know? And he sure as shit did. And she comes back as the Luna that we know, it just completely unhinged. And you're like, oh my God. And you see him like building up this stable. And it's just really compelling stuff from what I have seen just in snippets and promos that you can find on YouTube. I wish more of that stuff was out there. Because, I mean, it's ridiculous, of course. He's going on and on about, I have tasted of the beetle nut and communed with Abuda Din. And mind you, it's like in a studio show setting with Gordon Solie, of all people, having to try to sell this shit. And this man who is just going painted face, has this legion of henchmen who all look like extras at a GWAR concert, basically. And it is absolutely insane. And that's to say nothing of him as a booker, which I think he had a pretty good mind for the business. You know, didn't do anything revolutionary necessarily, but just was like a solid hand who he would want sort of steering the ship.
Like the absolute insane stuff that you were talking about, Tim, with is it Purple Haze is the one that's on the strange one where there's a swamp monster coming out the coming out the ocean at the beach. It's just insane. I'm trying to find the, because we had a brief sighting of Kevin Sullivan on the last Croc and Roll. I'm just flicking through my notes to see what I said.
He was there also for like an interview. You did an interview segment.
Oh yeah, so here we go. So from this is the same week that we had the same week that we had the Rock and Roll Express title one. Kevin Sullivan promo. Tony's face at one point echoed how I felt. What the fuck is he saying? Said a lot without saying anything at all, but it was strangely enthralling because it was Kevin Sullivan.
Last night, I was summoned to the temple by Abuda Din himself. And as we walked into the Hall of Memories, the chairman of the board himself was there. Yes, back underneath the yellow boy cape. And as the beetle nut was passed out, and as we chewed off on the nut, and everything got clearer, as we went down the Amazon River in our minds, and all the fears, and all the loathing. And as Linda from Malacca came upon the haze and put him in the sweat box, and they were screeching for delight, Abuda Din himself turned to me and said, the spike was given to you. The spike was given to you for one reason, to end careers.
Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, welcome back to the second half of the Special Relations podcast. We've had an absolutely fantastic first half, and we're going to we're sans Rory just now, but we are, as I said, going to try and get him back for Tim's happy place. So I hope Tim, I hope you're thinking of a very Rory friendly match. If you do pick an NXT one, won't be disappointed at all.
So many options.
Oh, I know, so many options and so many things that you can indulge them with, maybe over indulge them with on the NXT front.
Yes.
But whilst we're waiting for Rory to finish his other commitments, and we're going to make a start on to the second half, I will tell you what else you can find on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network. On episode 559 of the Place to Be podcast, Scott and JR are joined by JR Sinead D'Amato to enjoy Americana with the classic WrestleMania 7. And it certainly is one of the best episodes that they've done. It was an absolute belter. So if you've not listened, go back and listen to that. On the newest episode of Senior Video, the absent Rory is with his 20 years ago podcast partner Chris Lacey as they go over the 1989 Coliseum release of Focusing on the Ultimate Warrior. Would you like to leave comments for that, Rory?
Well, I would, but I'm not there, am I?
Thanks, Rory. Drew and Ryan give us another GWCW Research Pod Blast, this time looking at Ric Flair as a tag team wrestler. Andy Atherton gives us another installment of the Wrestling Evolution. This time he sits down with Jason D'Amato and discusses the amazing career of my countryman Rowdy Roddy Piper. On the newest NWA Saturday special, Scott and the Doctor discuss some NWA news, including the return of NWA Power, and they recap UWN Primetime Live number 3. Please rate, review and subscribe to the Wrestling Network. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Amazon Music. Just search Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network. Check out the Place to Be Nation pop feed with some great shows that include The Year in Pop, Laughing Theatre, The Great Debate, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of the Action, Making Mount Rushmore, Blockbuster Rewind and so much more. So please subscribe today. And whilst you're in the subscribing mood, please subscribe to another pair of tremendous podcast feeds. Easy for me to say. First, there's Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position, which is home of Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, the Brother Sister Rewatch podcast, The Journey Through Infinity, and much, much more. Also check out the new North-South Connection podcast network brought to you by JT Rizzero, Chad Campbell and Aaron George. It's the home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, Three-Way Dance, and the Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Lynn's Wrestling, The Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, TNA Never Dies, Shrink Wrapped, and more. We've officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have until New Year's Eve to do your research, promote matches, and build your list. Conversation and rules can be found at facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. On our social media pages, the greatest song from a movie tournament has just finished, so there will be no more voting on that one for a while on that page. I believe it was Ghostbusters that won. Am I right?
I think it was Eye of the Tiger.
Was it Eye of the Tiger that won? I really should have done my research on it.
Fitting choices.
It was.
That's how one of these tournaments should go. I mean, you have your personal favorites, your darlings, your Cinderellas that you want to make a great showing. But at the end of the day, that's. Can't ask for a much better final than that.
Yeah, the big hitters all got through to like the Elite Eight, and from there was no real Cinderella story in there.
No, I think it was
and no tampering, thankfully.
Yes.
No tampering. We did have a bit of a hiatus in the middle, when there was some attempted tampering, probably from the Russians, given that it is an election year, but certainly. We got there in the end, and it was the best ones made it through. I'm glad to see that Don't You Forget About Me made it as far as it did. That's a banger. But certainly it was a great tournament, and look out for the next one that'll be coming up in the not too distant future.
I'm just looking now. Eye of the Tiger beat Power of Love, and then Ghostbusters got third place over Footloose.
Ah, that's what I'm thinking of then. So yeah, so if that's your final four, then that's
it's a fine final four. Yeah,
absolutely.
Apart from Bohemian Rhapsody and Hakuna Matata, a very 80s heavy tournament, 80s final group, to be fair.
I feel like it's to be expected, because you think of like 80s movies and how associated with those like montage scenes they are set to popular song, and it just that's something that went a bit out of fashion later.
You don't really get soundtrack albums anymore, so there's not ones that really last as long as they would.
Mm-hmm. But in the 90s you got some bang up soundtracks, but you wouldn't even necessarily hear a lot of those songs in the movie itself. It would just be like, this is the soundtrack for Batman Forever is the classic example I go to. Right. And it's like, I don't think that Seal song Kiss from a Rose is actually in the movie. Right. It was everywhere in terms of like, you could hear it in the radio, the music video. So iconic, but it's not like that was a song from in that movie, really. I mean, I may be wrong about that, but I don't.
I mean, if it is, it's like not a very memorable usage
of it. And the U2 song's only in right at the end.
Yep.
Now that you're thinking that, is there ever a bit where My Heart Will Go On is actually in the is in Titanic?
Just the the instrumental.
I think you're right.
Well, Skyfall.
Wow, that's like a topic in and of itself, isn't it? Like famous songs from movies that aren't actually in the movie.
Well, Skyfall was my pick, but I think I got knocked out second round, so that shows you what I know.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a lot of you to kill got further than Skyfall.
Jeez.
Disgraceful.
but it was a fantastic tournament. Thanks to everyone who got involved, and let's just look out for the next one coming up, and you'll no doubt hear more from any of the podcasts in the future about what that's going to be. Please be sure to check out placebination.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crowe, Polly's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion and Matt's Disney Live Action Journey. If you're doing shopping online from Amazon, please be sure to click the banner on the right side of the PlaceBination homepage or use placebination.com/Amazon. It will take you right to Amazon and helps out PTBN at no cost to you. Whilst you're there, pick up a copy of long-time listener Adrian Cotton's second book, AWO Big Time Players, Episode 2, Continuing to Grow. It's a vivid description of the second episode of the Alpha Wrestling Organization's Big Time Players, and it's also it's available as an ebook and a paperback. You can get both episodes 1 and 2 in paperback form for $15.98. And of course, you can't be going online shopping and not check out the new Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network store. Check out tpublic.com and type in PTBW in the search bar, and it'll take you right to all of your favourite wrestling networks, podcasts, merchandise. You'll have lots of logos on things like t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, face masks, how 2020. All the best podcasts have the logo on great merchandise. Isn't that right, Ben?
All the great best shows, like that Cuter Standard one, and the one about where they talk about world championship wrestling, and that NXT show. there aren't any others. I'm off the top of my head, I'm missing, am I? I mean, we've got some on this show.
Croc and Roll have got them at Highway to the Impact Zone. Yeah. You've got Main Event.
Main Event's got some, yeah.
You've got the Mothership, PTB NXT, Talking WCW, all of the great shows.
I was very happy with how the Talking WCW and PTV NXT logos translated, because you're never sure what you're going to get with that sort of thing. I remember I was on a blog years and years ago that just for shits and giggles, we did like a merch store, but things did not print, did not translate nearly as well as what I'm seeing from the TeePublic quality control. So
it must be
been real happy, real happy with how everything's come out.
Must be nice to be on a couple of shows, Tim, that have the merchandise, you know.
Well, look, we've got to
get. I said a couple of shows.
Yeah, you have the special relations in Highway to the Impact Zone.
Oh yeah.
Come on,
so
now.
So,
Logan, if you're listening, it sounds as if Benny's brought back into line. Thank you very much.
Now, I would like a senior video coffee mug.
It's all about the senior video mug. All about the senior video mug.
The senior video mug does look really good. I've got a senior video t-shirt.
I think we need to get buy some mugs and then like do some competitions or something.
the good thing about TeePublic is that they've got a European based store. So all of my t-shirts came in a couple of days. I think they came from Germany, which came in no time at all. But the mugs don't. The mugs still come from the States, so it cost you an arm and a leg to get them shipped over. But if you want a t-shirt,
international shipping,
if you want a t-shirt or you want a mask or anything that requires it to be printed on fabric, I think it's all European. So the shipping costs, I think I paid about £2-3 for shipping from Europe, and that was for the whole lot. I get three t-shirts, so it's really good. And I can't praise enough the customer service that they had, because I remember looking at it, and because of the Rona, I've been staying with the good lady. She's had my company every day since March.
Poor woman.
I know. She deserves a medal at the end of the year. So I put in half of the good lady's address and half of my mum and dad's address. So I had to email them to ask them to change it. And I had a response in 20 minutes. And they came 2 days later. I cannot fault them enough. So if you have any issues, don't worry, because TeePublic will sort you out. They're absolutely wonderful.
Nice.
There you go. That gets you some more gear, surely.
I would think so. I'm waiting till payday to get more, because there is the stuff is absolutely superb.
And in all fairness, I'm gonna say, because I know Scott gets our style of humour anyway, but in all fairness, Scott has apologised about the lack of chicken salad merch on several occasions. It's something to do with the logo. The logo doesn't fit the t-shirt or something.
I think it's something, because I think what they need to do from talking to him on a, I think it was on, obviously Dr. G was saying on The Last Croc and Roll, he spoke to him about it, and it's difficult. You need to do something to the logo. You need to do something to the logo to have it like transparent enough to go on a t-shirt, so it's not for the want to try. So if all the chicken salad fans out there, and I know there is plenty, it is coming.
Joe and Hank want their merch, god damn it.
but show the kids need this merch. So tpublic.com. You don't need to type in anything absurd in your address. tpublic.com, search bar at the top, PTBW, and you will get everything and anything you could possibly want.
Like that theme tune, that was quite jaunty.
Yeah, it was.
I like it.
It was a jaunty tune. And if there's something that we are known for, it's jaunty things.
Oh, jaunty tunes.
Jaunty turns of phrases. Jaunty everything. This
jaunty may be a turn of phrase I have to write down.
And speaking of turns of phrases, Callum, that leads us to our next item.
It certainly does. So the one thing that, even before the podcast started, Tim would always be enamoured with the certain turns of phrase, Britishisms, that we would... in part on the chat. We thought because Tim is on with us tonight, we would ask him if he's got any turns of phrases that he particularly enjoys, doesn't particularly like, or anything he just wants to know what it means. So, Tim, have you been doing your research on
the joint? Yeah, I think it'd be awfully rich of me to come on here and be like, let me tell you about some of the things you say that really ticked me off. I didn't like this expression that has no intrinsic meaning beyond how you use it. But I'm going to criticize it all the same. No, that would be very presumptuous, I guess, of me. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to tell you about the ones that I like. And... you know, I'm kind of torn between what are my favorites, I think I'm going to give the nod to one that I had never heard until, I'm pretty sure, Callum, you were the first person to use it, like, in one of our chats, and it was on the lash. And I was like, what? And it was like, I mean, and within, I could use context clues to see that you meant, you know, you're partying, basically, or talking about a party where you were on the lash. And I was just like, where, how does that come in? And I confess, I did not research the origin or anything, because I just wanted to appreciate it on its own terms. So thank you for that contribution of on the lash. I was on the lash Friday night, hence my confusion Saturday when I thought we were doing this podcast mistakenly in a moment of panic. So that's how I'll use it in a sentence.
I don't actually know what on the lash, where on the lash comes from. Are you able to enlighten us, Ben?
I don't think so. Tim is correct with the how he's used it. So on the lash is basically when you're going out for, when you're having a good time and you aim to stay out for the night. We can't do that much anymore here. We have to be on the lash till 10 o'clock at the moment.
Does it mean that you're not only out but also getting shit faced, or can it just mean?
Yes.
Okay. So it's implied. Ben, I think you said the other day, and I knew I should have written it down. And I don't.
But
think
I know did. There's. I know there's one that you like in particular. So I'll give you a set. See if you can remember it. And then.
Yeah. Well, I'll like. I also like. First time I heard your. Like, I'm trying to think of how you even used it, but you said, oh, you're a real ledge. And I was like, a what? Or you said, you're a fucking ledge.
That was the one I was thinking of, so I don't know which one.
And I was like, what is that? And it was like, is that like a ledge as in like legend? Like legendary? It's just like, nice. Like, you're really cool. You're keen, dude, you know? But ledge. And I had to ask if I was pronouncing it right, I believe.
Yeah, so fucking ledge, you've got it absolutely spot on. So it is short for legend.
Okay. Fucking ledge. So on the lash, good lady, of course.
That's Callum.
I've never heard anyone except Cal use that. The good lady. That tickled me. I don't know why. It's just... I can't explain it.
I don't think I've ever used it in the context other than in our chat either. I think it's just been one. I think it's just that. Although she's gone from the good lady to the I just put up with you. I've put up with you for the last 9 months. Shut the fuck up, lady. That's her saying that to me, not the other way about.
Wow. Just shut the fuck up, lady.
She's alright.
Yeah, the alright lady.
The she'll do lady.
I've realised if you put up with living with me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, she's a bloody saint.
She really is.
But I don't want to call her the saintly lady, because she might start getting ideas.
I feel like I did hear it in I was watching an old movie. I don't even know what the movie was at this point, but it's like, okay, have I been hearing this pretty much all my life and it just didn't register until I actually like read it and had to process what good lady? That's an odd thing to say. But yeah. So I have another one. Written down. I'm not sure I know how to pronounce this one. Kluge?
Klunge?
Klunge? I have no context for this. I don't know why I wrote it down. What does this mean?
do you want me to deal with this?
Ben, this is your idea.
It became popular over here through a show called The Inbetweeners.
Okay.
So I know there was an American version that didn't translate, partly because the language that is used in our version could never be used on American television, even on cable. The clunge is a ladies' front area.
Okay. That is kind of what it sounds like. If I had to guess, I would have said it sounds like a euphemism for bodily anatomy.
But yeah, there's one character called Jay who uses the word and the phrase rather a lot.
Okay.
So going by the, you know, the alternative to the Webster's Dictionary, the Urban Dictionary, clunge is vagina, well known from the in-betweeners. To use it in a sentence, I want to know where the ladies are at. Let's ask the bouncer where the club full of clunge is. So I can say that I've never used that in a sentence myself. However, yes, it was everybody was seeing it when the in-betweeners was this height. I mean, every Tom, Dick and Harry was seeing it. Mainly dicks, to be fair.
That's one that I think our mutual friend J. Arsenio D'Amato should appropriate. That's right.
I mean, that's... If there's ever a British word that Jad could co-opt for himself, it's definitely clunge, absolutely.
Definitely, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I have to bring that up with them.
Exactly. The hoovers with the clunge. Yeah. I mean, it's there.
Man.
here's the last one. The last one is the list. Wazzock.
Oh, Wazzock. That's a great one.
It's time once again for British Border Dash, the game where Hawks players guess British slang.
Wazzock. Wazzock are the popular shoes in London. Everyone has the Wazzocks. If you don't have the Wazzocks, then you're not in.
Wazzock means excitement.
Wazzock. Wazzock is a fruit, kind of like a pear.
Wazzock is a elevator.
Peter Griffin is a Wazzock. Wazzock means idiot.
To Ben, who will just run down the rules and regulations, because that's what we like here, on the happy place and what is to be expected. So, Ben, fire away, sir.
Everything does need rules, Callum. That's a very good point. We are in Tim's happy place. We've got plenty of pictures of Alex Riley, Oat Hart and Sammy Guevara everywhere. So, just for Tim's benefit. So, the rules are, you are allowed 3 albums, 1 TV show box set, 3 movies, 1 wrestling pay-per-view, and 5 matches. The rule is, none of your matches can be from the same pay-per-view that you've picked. So it's going to be a different pay-per-view, basically. We will begin with your 3 favorite albums of choice, sir.
Okay, I'm going to go with, and it's actually my favorite album of this band, and I think I'm sort of alone in saying that. I don't meet a lot of people who are out on this ledge with me, who, you know, even being as major fans of the band as I am, it is my favorite band. It is my favorite album by them. I'll stop beating around the bush and say I'm talking about Jimmy Eat World's Invented. From 2010, it's in the midpoint of their discography, really. Very overlooked at the time, and I would regard it as extremely underrated. I don't know exactly why it wasn't embraced to the degree that I did within the wider fandom. I feel like it just sort of flew under the radar. Like, maybe it was bad timing. Maybe the zeitgeist just wasn't ripe for it. But I don't know. It hit me right in the place I was when I needed to hear music like that. You know that feeling when it's just you hear a song or an entire album that you just feel like, this is for me. Like, this is just speaking to me. And it's just very much what it was. It's like a very personal album for me. It's almost difficult to go back to listen to now, because I feel like I'm in a much different place today than I was then, but left such a powerful impact. So that's one I will always just have to carry with me forever. Okay, so that's one. Wow, I promise they won't be this. I won't be this verbose for the rest. I am also going to go with, kind of in the same vein, a band I didn't appreciate too much in their early days and growing up, and that is Blink 182. And in fact, I am going to choose their 2003 self-titled, where it just showed a lot of, I think, lyrical and just musical maturity that I think they'd always been capable of, but were sort of holding back. And they finally just sort of, for whatever reason, decided to pull the trigger. And out of nowhere in 2003, you hear the lead single off of that, Feeling This, and just, again, speaks for the rest of the album. You're going, whoa, where was this all my life? That's one just, you know, it's certainly not as personal as Invented is to me, but an album that I always can throw on just for any occasion, really. And then I think I'm going to go with an off-the-wall pick, but one, Ben, that I know will be near and dear to you. I got to give it up for T-Swift. I'm going to go 1989 for her. I think that's sort of, I don't know if it's the best thing she's ever done. I don't even know if it's my favorite, but for Desert Island purposes, for Happy Place purposes, I think it fits the bill. Such an achievement in her genre. I feel like it's, you know, when you want to hear that kind of just such polished pop music, I can't do much better than that. So that's where I'm going to go with my musical choices. How do we feel about those?
I'm quite happy, but I'll leave it to my colleagues.
I think they're all great choices. Wasn't expecting Taylor Swift to come out after the first two, but I can.
But mixed up a little bit.
Oh yeah, I mean, variety is the spice of life, after all. But no, all fantastic choices.
Okay, I mean, I could easily go three Jimmy Eat World Records, but I don't know, just for the sake of a little bit of artistic variety. All right. Where would you like to go next? I'm open to anything. Matches. Okay. How about a show?
I was going to say is that you're quite clearly down that pop punk route, aren't you? So, like, oh, yeah. the likes of Green Day and Sum 41, I can imagine, are very high in your playlist.
Sum 41, not so much, unless my friend James Grunberg is doing an a cappella rendition of their hit, what was it called? Batlift? Yeah. Yeah.
I can well imagine it, actually, yes.
You have not lived until you've heard. And I mean, it's truly a cappella. He gets everything.
Yeah, he knows it all.
Guitars, that bass line, just all of it.
Yes,
anyway, no, they're fine, but Green Day certainly, yeah, I mean, growing up, like, they're one of my first favorite bands as, like, a little kid, and, you know, sort of fell off and rediscovered them later. They had that pretty cool comeback, you know, in 2005, you know, American Idiot. Gosh, I am almost considering putting that on the list, to be honest with you, but I think I've just played it to death. Like, I just, I don't want to say I'm over it, because I can, you know, again, always just throw that on. But
I don't need to hear it again in the way I feel like I need to hear some of these other songs. I'm a big pop punk, emo, let's face it. Jimmy World, you know, pioneers of emo, like emo going mainstream.
I can't imagine you very emo. Yeah. All I was going to say is, speaking of play, you know, being played to death and whatever, of albums we played, that I'm looking at these singles that were released from 1989.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck me. You know, it's saying the obvious, but Taylor knows a pop song, doesn't she? Bloody hell.
Exactly.
It's absolutely fantastic.
And that album, like, inspired this cottage industry of, like, middle-aged white dudes doing covers of Taylor Swift songs. Jim Adkins being one of them, by the way. Frontman of Jimmy World. He did a cover, well, it wasn't from 1989, but he did a cover of We Are Never Getting Back Together. And you would think, like, what? How's a rock band going to? And, like, they kill it. Like, I heard them do it live when I saw them on tour that summer. And it was just like, holy shit. Like, I wasn't even that into Taylor Swift at the time. And I thought that song was just kind of dumb. but I was like, all right. Like, it sounds bad that I needed them to, like, legitimize it in a way, because that's just gross, right? But I mean, it was sort of eye-opening. I was like, that's kind of a bop. And I, you know, got a little bit more into her. She did a lot to support them, actually. She did she was doing, was it a Vine that she did at the time, I think, of her, like, lip syncing the middle. And it was funny. Just, hey, this is this band I really liked when I was a little kid. And I'm like, oh, geez, I feel old. And, yeah, got them some more exposure again. Not that they ever went away, but it was just, I don't know, it was funny. And the two are just, it's one of those you wouldn't think of them as being in any way linked or related. But in my head, I just have that connection of, you know, lumping Taylor Swift in with my Jimmy Eat World fandom for some reason.
My nephew will be all right. My nephew did it to me with an Oasis song earlier on, said, like, this is a really old classic, Uncle Ben. And it's like, this was only released like 5 minutes ago. It's like 20 years old now.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. We forget that a lot of these things we love are 10, 20 years old now. And then, you know, we act so shocked and disgusted. And it's like, well, we're old. What do you want?
It's because we're getting on a bit.
What do you want? Yeah.
All right. What is your TV show of choice, please, Mr. Capel?
I think you know what it is.
I've got two in my head, so which
yeah,
one?
Yeah, I'm sure you do. All right, I'm going to go with the one I've been watching more of here recently. Guys, I have – this is a terrible admission. It would be a terrible omission if I left it off. But, okay, the show is Melrose Place. And let me just explain a little bit for people who, again, are younger, may not realize how television used to work. First of all, it used to be very bad. I feel like people don't understand. Anyone maybe under the age of 20, 25, I don't know, is used to, like, television having a baseline standard of quality, right? Like, even a bad show today is sort of only but so bad, I guess. Kind of like wrestling. But growing up, actual, in, you know, the 80s and the 90s, I'm speaking primarily of, television was trash garbage. Like, there were the occasional, like, good, like, actual critically acclaimed shows, but not a lot, right? Like, for the most part, it was just shit. It was just pure shit thrown out there just to fill time, because that's what networks need to do, just sell commercials, get ratings, do the news, do sports, and fill the rest of it. Who cares? It's just, it's garbage. No one's going to watch this. It doesn't matter. And so that's what Melrose Place was, as one of those primetime network dramas back in the day. Ran from 1992 to 1999. And they produced, and this was common of that genre of television back then, they would produce upwards of 32 episodes per season. I mean, you're looking at, you're basically watching this show, not year-round, but you get a few months off, and then it comes back. Like, you're not having these huge waits between seasons of your favorite shows like you do today. And so you have all of these hours of programming, right? 32 episodes per season. It ran for 7 seasons. I have watched 3.5 seasons of Melrose Place in this calendar year alone in quarantine, starting in, I think I started that in April or May. And it's October now. Do the math. I have watched, over 100 episodes easily of this shitty 20 years dead primetime network drama. And I love it. It's bad. It's over the top. Like, everybody's unlikable. They make horrible life choices, and it's so addictive. I can't get enough.
I mean, obviously, you guys have soap operas over there. They're over here prime time. They're on like 5-6 times a week. So we get like 3 hours of this rubbish as well.
Oh, yeah. So, we would have the daytime soaps also, here in the States, which would be on daily and just far cheaper production values, of course. Like, you knew when you were watching opera, like, it had that look. And the primetime network dramas were just sort of a different entity in that it was just a weekly television show, but paced and written like a trashy daytime soap, basically. And this is what we kind of our bread and butter, man, just shitty television in the United States that people have such fond memories of. Dallas is a big one too. That Dallas ran for God something like 13 years.
Yeah.
And I like it more in theory than in practice. It's before my time, but it's funny to just, make fun of in the way that Melrose Place is too, but actually like know Melrose Place pretty well. I don't know Dallas that well.
Dallas Dynasty were huge over here.
Really? Wow.
Well, Dynasty obviously because of like Joan Collins and stuff.
I've never seen Dynasty streaming anywhere.
I'm trying to think, boys. What would be like our equivalent to Melrose Place?
Brookside.
No, I don't think it would be a soap. I'm thinking something like Bad Girls or something like that.
Footballers' Wives.
Oh, Footballers' Wives, yeah.
There we go.
Well, you talk about 13 episodes of anything for you guys. That's like an entire series, not just a season of television.
2 series worth, that is.
Yeah.
If we got six for any season, that's not.
That's just the show.
We're happy with 6-7 episodes. That'll do us. Right. We don't need any further details.
Especially a Footballer's Wives.
We need at least 30 a year over here.
Well, did you not see that we had one recently, one of our soaps, EastEnders. There was a big announcement. Now, bear in mind, this show has been on since the mid-80s, guys. So it's been on for about 30 years.
1985, I think it started.
1985. So it started in 1985. So it's been on for 35 years. They announced four or 5 weeks ago that the following Monday was the premiere of Series 2.
Wow.
Series 2, so it's either our episodes, our shows will either run for 6 episodes a series or 30 years.
Jeez, everything old is new again, right? Well, we're bringing back Dexter, too, because somehow everyone has it in their minds. We've apparently decided that was a brilliant show, except for the finale. And I'm like,
Did y'all like not see the same last 3 or 4 seasons of Dexter that I did? Because that show went off a cliff.
It went off a cliff after the was the Trinity season 4. I wanted to say.
Yeah, Trinity was 4. They did all 5 was mostly just fallout from that. So
yeah,
they could run on those fumes, do okay. But man, like 6, 7, I think they even had an 8th season. Were doo-doo shit. My goodness.
it's like Lost. The people who remember. Who go back and think that Lost was this excellent, excellent show. It was like Elder.
It was good for 2 seasons.
Yeah, it ran for 6 series, and that was about 4 too long.
That was one that I was reluctant to ever even start because I still felt kind of burned by The X-Files when Lost started, which was, you know, about, I'd say, 2 years after X-Files ended. But, like, I just remember being obsessed with the X-Files in the 90s and the way that that whole mythology just sort of shit the bed. It was like, man, this investment of my time is just has not been worth it. And which is not entirely fair to say looking back, but I don't know where I was at the time. I was like, I don't want to watch another show that could potentially be that or just be like that. It very much could be. So, I don't know. It seems maybe I dodged a bullet there.
You definitely did.
You did, sir. Well done.
I know it has its defenders. I know people really liked that show from end to end, through and through. Just, you know, no disrespect. I don't regret not picking it up and watching it. You know what I mean?
What are your 3 favorite movies, Tim?
Ooh, okay. So we're going to span some genres here. I've talked about this before and actually did a laugh in theater on it with Mr. Andy Atherton. That is Ghostbusters.
Yes.
I can't even call it a horror comedy. There's no real, I mean, there's some scary stuff in it, but it's a comedy, right? And God, it still just cracks me up. I don't know if it's a movie that you can show someone who didn't grow up with it or didn't see it when they were kids or just closer to its time. But man, I just, I love the shit out of some Ghostbusters. It always has the same effect on me, always puts me in a good mood if I'm feeling kind of shitty. I'm gonna laugh at the same lines I've always laughed at over and over. I can't say I ever noticed things I didn't notice before because I've watched it. It's probably the movie I've watched the most of anything. It was one of those like I would watch that every single day when I was between the ages of probably 4 and 6 at my grandparents. Just, it was like a ritual almost, you know, you just have these little routines when you're a kid. It's very upsetting when they get disrupted in some way. And that was one of them, was watching Ghostbusters like every day. So that's how just imprinted on me I think that movie is. I'm also going to, I'm going to stay in, well, all these are going to be in the 80s, actually.
Excellent.
I realized. I didn't plan that, I promise. Like comfort food type stuff here. This is a happy place. It's, you know, we're not trying to be highbrow sophisticated.
We're not watching Schindler's List here.
No. But, I mean, even something like an Avengers or an MCU film, which I love so many of those, I wouldn't put on something like this. Just sort of feels too recent, comes with almost too much baggage. Whereas something like my next choice, RoboCop. Now we're doing action, sort of an action satire in a lot of ways. I think is just absolutely brilliant. It is. Like, you can watch it on just the level of this is a really great action movie, like real gets the adrenaline flowing, like a lot of real fuck yeah moments. But like when you sit down and you know, really pay attention to it and have half a brain, you realize that it's just, you know, satirizing consumer culture. And a lot of the messaging of that movie still comes through so very much today. Like it still feels sort of relevant. It's kind of sad in some respects, but it's just a great movie for all occasions. Also very quotable and very funny. So yeah, and I don't know that a lot of people know that about RoboCop. Like if they've never seen it, they might think, oh, this is just throwaway stupid 80s action movie garbage. And it's really more than that. It's quite transcendent, I think. So yeah, RoboCop. And rounding it out, we're going to, this will be seasonally appropriate, guys. And that's going to be a horror film. One of my, actually, I would say my favorite sci-fi horror movie. Maybe not pure favorite horror, but this is the 1986 David Cronenberg remake of The Fly, which I think I've talked about within our little group a bit. And it is just so, God, it's a real tragic, sad story at the heart of it. Like there's these two characters and a romance that's, you buy into, it's very believable. You've got great acting from Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum, who were a couple in real life at the time. A lot of times that chemistry does not come through to the performance when you put these two on screen together in something. But in this case, they were magic and really make this thing work, which is important because The Fly asks a lot of you as a viewer, because you're going to see this man quite literally fall apart and turn into a 200-pound human-man fly-insect hybrid. And it is quite disgusting. But I love it so much.
Excellent. I'm glad Ghostbusters got some love finally. We've done this. How many goes? I'm about 9-7 goes, and nobody's picked it yet.
It's really shocking. I mean, you've had quite a variety of guests. You had people who are like of our generation, I feel like, yeah, who would, you know, that movie would be in their wheelhouse. So, man,
I remember we went to this big place once, and there was a lot of people in there, and they have like a big screen, and people were watching the big screen. I mean, I don't know if this might catch. I don't know if this will catch on as an idea.
Yeah,
Around Halloween time, and we were, yeah, it was a very special like Halloween episode of screening of Ghostbusters. It was such a great film.
Yeah, I had the pleasure to do one of those too. Actually, it was I want to say the 25th anniversary, might have been the 30th anniversary of the movie.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they did like a kind of a big tour, where, you know, you had a very limited one shot and you miss it sort of deal, but it was important enough that I went to the theater by myself. You know, no one else wanted to see this 30-year-old movie with actors who in some cases are no longer with us. And it's like, come on, it's Ghostbusters. And I had a great time. Great experience.
I can't believe people would refuse that invitation, Tim.
I know.
So what wrestling pay-per-view are we watching, if we're with you?
Just before we go on, I've got a welcome interruption here. Congratulations, Tim, for being one of the very few people to use the word transcend correctly.
Oh,
grinds my veritable gears, that one, but you used it in the correct context. So
how is it used incorrectly, I wonder?
Because people just good.
Oh no,
I think this is really transcendent. That's not what it fucking means.
No, I mean it transcends. it goes beyond its genre trappings. So
Tim, mate, we know, you and I, yeah.
Everyone
go beyond its genre trappings because it transcended into Capital Combat.
Very good.
That's a roller coaster of a comic. Oh man. All right. What pay per view?
What pay per view? It could be Capital Combat. We don't know yet.
Could be Capital Combat, yeah. With the return of RoboCop. For my money, I would say the best B show wrestling pay per view, at least yeah, for WWF, and that is No Way Out 2001.
Yeah, excellent choice.
Top to bottom, just super, super watchable. Like, it's one you haven't, like, gotten sick of. You haven't watched it so many times that you're just done with it. Like, maybe certain matches from the show, you're like, I don't really have to see this again. But for the most part, I wouldn't say that falls into the category of overplayed, right?
Can I just interrupt you for a sec, Tim? Sorry. Callum? Yeah. What was one of the main events from that show again? Like the most heated feud on that show?
Well, the match that I remember the most from it was probably the Dudleys versus Kane and Undertaker versus Edge and Christian, the triple threat table match for the tag team titles. But I don't think I don't think it was GWE worthy. But it is everything on that show is even Stephanie against Trish was, you know, passable for what it was.
Yeah, miraculous for what people were probably expecting going in.
Rory, I'm sure there's something else though. Am I missing? What was it?
There was a really good Fatal 4-Way for the IC title as well.
Yeah.
WWE list right now, and we can eliminate the matches that all of us don't have. Probably a good way of doing it, but I can't think of many big ones that we won't all have on.
I can't. You know, you'd be a fool to miss something, wouldn't you?
I think obviously you're talking about Steven Richards versus Jerry the King Lawler. Classic from
Right.
From
was it
paper.
Not was it not billed as Right to Censor versus Right to Strip or something stupid like that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right on that count. Oh, yeah.
Classic. Tim, carry on your thoughts. We'll take the make-up column again in a bit.
No, I mean, that's. I don't have much more to say on it. It's just one of those. It's a show everybody likes, but hasn't like you haven't overdosed on it. An obvious pick could be something like a SummerSlam 2002. Right, which is just top to bottom an awesome like super card of a show, but I feel like we've all watched that a million times already.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I'm wrestling 20 years ago, obviously 4 months now as this one goes out, I'm really seeing No Way Out 2001 again, because I think you've said it best there, Tim. You know, it's a great event, but I haven't seen it a million billion times, so it's going to feel great and fresh when I watch it again. It's a mighty combination.
I mean, I'm just looking through the matches just now, and I can't think of anything on it that's bad. I mean, you'll have the occasional show where it'll have like a really good show that'll have a really bad match on it, but Big Show Raven was 4 minutes. It was fine for what it does. It does the job that you need to do.
Yep.
The 4-way is great. Stephanie against Trish is a miraculous effort for the two of them. Mm-hmm. You've got the three
absolute,
stages of hell.
Absolute banger, that is. Oh, three stages of hell. Oh,
three stages
Rory.
Of hell.
Three stages of hell. That's
three
the one.
Three stages of hell. Yeah.
That is for some people one of the 100 greatest matches of all time.
Right. That I will say is kind of a divisive. Like, it didn't used to be, but it feels like in recent years there's been sort of, I don't know, some chatter about, you know, maybe it's just anti Triple H stuff working like his epic match style that he does. And that's sort of on display in that match. But I don't know. You have Austin who, you know, he's not going to let Triple H just wrestle a Triple H match. Right. So I think it sort of stays grounded, which is a weird thing to say about a match that is kind of excessive as that is. But I still, like, I had that very high on my GWWE.
I had it high on mine as well, Tim. Did you have your high on yours, Rory?
Just
keep poking it.
Callum, did you have it high on yours?
So Stephen Richards and Jerry Lawler. The table match. table match was all right, and Rock Kurt Angle. I think Rory, I think you had that in your. Maybe you did it as well, but it was me.
I
didn't quite like my list, but excellent main event, no question about it.
Tap or I'll break your fucking ankle. That's all you need in the match.
Now, I will say, as a caveat, that if this is my desert island, my happy place, my choice, then I want the uncensored, unbleeped version. I need to hear him say, I'm going to break your fucking ankle. That is a travesty that they took that out.
Yeah.
No, it's No Way Out is sometimes, well, not anymore, but like when it's Elimination Chamber or Fastlane or insert crap name here, it's almost like a holding pattern, or it's like a couple of matches to set something up for WrestleMania coming up. But this was you didn't have that on this one. You had like everything was set up to, or a lot of things were set up to culminate at No Way Out. Like Triple H, Austin. So it's not just your regular last stop before WrestleMania. It's a good pay per view in and of itself. You could put this in July or September, mm-hmm. and it would still be a great pay per view.
It is. It feels like a very integral chapter in that, you know, the whole road to WrestleMania thing that they do, right? Where, as you said, that February pay per view sort of feels like an afterthought. Just we have to do a pay per view because it's a month, you know, so they sort of limp along, but you kind of can't get to WrestleMania, you know, even from the Rumble to WrestleMania in 2000 without No Way Out 2001. Like, it really is such an important building block.
Absolutely. Okay. The final part of the happy place, Tim, your five matches of choice. And then at the end, you pick the match we are going to watch.
Ooh, okay. Wow. All right. So, these should be good matches. You know, I'm tempted to subject
you. Not necessarily good. It just has to be favorite.
True. There is a difference.
We've had the King of the Road on here. Don't worry. It doesn't have to be good.
Well, look, I watched Halloween Havoc 1995 last night, so you're in the clear. I'm not in the mood to watch that on consecutive days this time. So, no, let's go with five matches. Okay. Starting from the top, I've got okay, stick with Kurt Angle, right? Talking about Kurt Angle, great main event he had with The Rock, a great what probably should have or could have been main event from SummerSlam 2001 against Stone Cold Steve Austin. Say what you will about the non-finish. I know that people ding it for that. I personally don't, because I think that it just plays so well into the story and what they are wanting and needing to get across in this feud. It's not even so much they booked themselves into a corner, like they shouldn't have done the match. No, absolutely do the match, but yeah, let it be indecisive so that we can ride this for a little while, because this is a great feud. Puts, even without like actually winning the title, beating Austin, just gives Kurt Angle such that sort of moral victory in the end, because he absolutely gets demolished in the match, but comes back from it and beats the piss out of then heel Stone Cold Steve Austin. And it's just such a stiff, like, back and forth, just brutal stuff. Like the shots on the outside with the post, like Angle getting bloodied, and then the great spot where Angle is like dragging Austin back into the ring, up the ring steps with the ankle lock, like just real mark out fist punching moments for me throughout that entire match. I love it. It's one of my, I would put it up in the category of like both favorite, not my number one, but like an easy top 10. Boy, what else? I will say, now I'm going to have to throw some love to NXT. I don't know if I should apologize for that.
yes. on this program. But look, I'm not going to make you watch an NXT match, so you can rest easy. That's the compromise I've struck here. And Rory's going to groan.
I'll just mute. You go ahead.
Feel free to
interject. That's what everybody else could say, though. Go ahead.
Feel free to interject. No, it is from TakeOver New Orleans. It is the main event from that show. My man, Johnny Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa. This is their first match, okay? So people criticize this feud for sort of going off the rails, for being, shall we say, overindulgent, for overstaying its welcome. But this is that first match, and sort of doesn't leave you with a whole lot of reason to keep the feud going, because Johnny outright wins. Like, he's the plucky underdog babyface, and he gets his big victory here over his hated rival, the man who was once his best friend. And that's kind of your story, right? But I think that people were just so invested in their characters and that feud that it was sort of like you couldn't do it to your audience to have Johnny lose again. That's sort of the risk of booking that sort of character. You can have a strong baby face who gets over with your audience and has sort of that underdog appeal, which essentially means they lose a lot, but they can remain over and they win the matches that they need to win. And so often I think that WWE gets that all wrong, and that they just have them lose everything and look like consistent losers rather than underdogs. And there's a difference. But this was a match going in. It just seemed like Johnny had to win based on his character, based on their audience, and they did the right thing here. I absolutely love the match, top to bottom. It's yes, there are a million finisher kickouts. I don't care. lots of false finishes. I don't care. It's funny. I know that for some people that takes them out of the match, because it's like, well, we've only had, you know, two submission attempts and one finisher. Let me, you know, get out my scorecard here. We're about one more finisher kick out away from this thing being over. Like, some people look at it that way because it's like so overdone. And I don't know. To me, I just, when the characters are gripping enough that I'm just losing myself in the moment and enjoying the match, I just find that adding to the match, if any, like making it more exciting for me, because I do buy into a lot of the, like, there are times I'm like, okay, this is probably going to be a false finish, but even if it is a false finish, it's going to be a really cool one. Like, there's a lot of drama tied up in this right now, and it's very effective for me. I'm willing to be led along as a viewer in that way, I guess is the way to put it. And if I'm not invested in the characters, if I'm not invested in the match, prime example of that being probably Undertaker, Triple H, their, what was it, from WrestleMania, not the Hell in the Cell, 27, I think it was. Like, I just so did not care and was so not biting on anything that they did. And it's because I didn't care. So it all comes down to your personal investment, personal preference, and enjoyment. So I'm an NXT guy. Johnny Gargano was my favorite wrestler on the planet in 2018, which sounds insane to say today, right? Because look at where he is. Just, my God, 2020, what are we doing? But that's my token NXT love that I'm going to give. All right. Now let's kick it over to WCW. And, is this – this might be the match that I want to watch. But, no, I have another one in mind for that. So
Let's talk about Fall Brawl 1998. The War Games match. No. Not the most highly regarded of WCW pay-per-views, certainly. In fact, according to some, may be among their worst efforts. However, that does overlook quite the gem of a little match in the form of Raven versus Perry Saturn. And this is for, like, release of the flock, I guess. If Saturn wins, the flock goes free, basically, right? And Saturn goes free as well. He was like, they did this long-running feud where Saturn was like on the outs with Raven and the flock, and then had to become Raven's servant, and that led to him being Lodi's servant, which hilarity ensued, right? And first of all, it's a great match. It's like WCW doing an ECW-style match, and I think that's something that in the Attitude Era, the WWF sort of excelled at, was very good at, kind of became their main event style when you think about it, like those Austin Dude Love matches being the prime example. WCW didn't do that so much, certainly not in their main event scene. Can you imagine old ass Hogan, like Hogan and Savage with like an ECW getting out cheese graters and what? Crack myself up, sorry. Savage coming off the top rope with a staple gun. made me bleed my own blood, brother. And so this is basically two ECW guys having an ECW match in WCW. And it's an example of WCW doing right by their mid-card. This was a mid-card feud. Like, it started in that spring, carried right on into the fall, didn't miss a beat. And, I mean, they really did it justice. It was never going to be elevated to the main event. Like, that just wasn't in the cards for WCW. But it sort of knew its lane and stayed in its lane. And I would say excelled in its lane. Some false finishes in this too, so that warms my heart, certainly. But it's not as crazy overboard as like a lot of the NXT stuff. But it's one of those, it's easy to overlook. If you haven't seen it in a while, please do go and check it out. I think it benefits from knowing the feud going in. Like, if you watch it in a vacuum, I don't know that it has the same effect, necessarily not realizing just how heated this rivalry was, because it was hot. And man, was I a Saturn mark. And WCW Saturn, like, in the late 90s, low-key, big Saturn energy. Like, I was into him.
It was all that. It was all that leather and chain links, wasn't it, Tim?
Must have been. Must have been. Yeah. Well, he really goes over the top after this match. Like, this is really Saturn's finest hour. And coming out of it, he adopts very much the 80s New York gay cab driver look. and it's really fantastic. Like, mesh shirts, the hat, the leather, the whole nine yards. Just, great stuff. Okay, so, do we stick with WCW? I think we do stick with WCW. I'm on number four now, right?
Yeah, two to go.
Okay, all right. So let's say, go to a... I want to do a Havoc. I feel like there's too many obvious choices for Halloween Havoc matches. You know, the good ones, like, they just sort of stand out. So I'm going to go Great American Bash. We haven't had a tag match yet. And so this is going to be from, make sure I've got my year right, 1996, is it? It is... Yes, the Steiner Brothers versus Fire and Ice.
Yeah.
Glad that got a pop, because I was afraid that might be crickets.
And this is a match I talked about for Talking WCW not too long ago. We did an episode. This is soft plug, you guys. Soft plugs are way to go. We did a Steiner Brothers episode on Talking WCW, and this was the match that I picked for that. And there's really nothing like remarkable about it. It's just a super solid, like coming out of nowhere, awesome tag team match. It's like no real stakes or anything. It's not going to be like a 4 or 5 star affair, but just gets you pumped. It's just like a great opener for this pay-per-view. And they be clubbering these hosses in this match. Holy shit. You get Scott Steiner in there. You get Scott Norton in there. My God. Ice Train, just huge motherfucker. And they are just getting thrown around. Big men throwing each other around is kind of like my preferred vision for wrestling. Go figure, right?
For wrestling. Okay, I'm glad to clarify that.
Yeah. Well, and in life. just a big old hoss fight from these beasts who can really go, and that's what this match is. That Frankensteiner that finishes the match at the end, like Scott Norton trying to take. First of all, Scott Steiner, the size he is at this point, even trying to deliver and execute the Frankensteiner, it was never a thing of beauty in the first place. It was just more of a feat of physicality. But by this point, he is just killing dudes with it. And to see Norton try to take that thing, you're like, man. But, it's like a little bit over 10-minute match. Such an easy watch. Throw it on. You'll have a great time. Okay. All right. So what are we going to watch? I have decided, I have spoken, that the most, well, not the most recent entry on my list, I realize, but for main roster WWE, we are going to go to the year 2012. And we're going to watch Brock Lesnar's comeback match against John Cena.
Oh, there we go.
Yes!
This is, you know what, this is a match I've only seen twice. Saw it not too long after it happened, and I've watched it one time since then. I remember really, I had it for GWWE, certainly. Like it a lot, but don't like remember that much in terms of just spots from the match. So it's just one I want to revisit. That's what came to me in the course of this conversation as the match I want to watch. How do y'all feel about it?
No, let's do it. Very high on my list. Great to see it again. I'm already right there. I'm on it already.
Pulling it up.
Wasting no time.
2:24:58, if you want to be precise.
Yep. I'm right. Yep. I'm off.
Go for that.
Sorry, get it again, Ben. Sorry, back to the beginning.
Sorry, man. 2:24:58.
Okie dokie.
Oh, yeah, I got it. It's a nice shot of the crowd.
Yep, I got it. I'm right there.
I'm getting there. Why aren't these? Okay, yes, they are in order. All right.
Yeah, you know, the network is so so good at that kind of thing.
Yeah, right. Seeing a 2012 Cody Rhodes here in a thumbnail.
Sorry. Press the right button to move on. There you go.
All right, give me that timestamp again.
2:24:58, sir.
58. All right, I'm with you.
It's a nice shot of the crowd.
Yes, it is. All right.
Remember Krauts?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Remember such that was like
such a bizarre concept, the Sea of Humanity.
It does actually feel.
If we are all ready, you can count us in. 3, 2, 1, play.
All right.
Now, going. I know we took the mick out of Callum earlier on for his lack of three stages of hell, but This is another match you missed off, Callum, but for the reason that you've never seen it. You remember you had to watch it during an episode because we were talking about it.
Yeah, when we actually got around to talking about it, so the two of you had it on, but we actually finally got around to talking about it, I dropped the bombshell that I'd never actually seen it before.
Shock and horror.
I know. Right? So I watched it as we were recording. So I think
I think the forgetfulness came later.
Oh no, the forgetfulness was in another episode because it was so much higher on the list.
This is kind of a dark period for me, to be honest. This is that pre-network, right? So this is 2012. I was way out on just the weekly shows, not watching them, not even really paying that much attention to the pay-per-views. I mean, the only thing that really kept me dialed in was probably listening to Place to Be podcast, where, you know, they would have topical coverage of this stuff. But, like, I would not say I was invested as a fan by any means at this point. It took the network to really bring me back to the extent that it brought me back to the current product, which has and probably always will be now very limited.
That's for better or worse.
yeah. So this is within that probably 2009 through 2013 range where I'm like, that is the period I am the least knowledgeable about.
Exactly where I was. I think it probably WrestleMania 20. I think I've said this on the air before, but WrestleMania 26 is where for me it all becomes quite the blur. Mm-hmm. I was not watching the week to week, month to month product, anything like it at this point. I was still ordering DVDs, as I do to this day, of course. Grin. Yeah. But I wasn't even checking results or anything like that. So I didn't find out anything out about this is even existence until I got the network, really.
Wow.
And I'm very glad to say, in the example of this match that I caught up, it was well worth the wait.
I wasn't there to tell the tale,
definitely not. What about you, Ben?
Yeah, I think I said this before. I came back in for the summer of Punk, so I was all in on that bit. This 2012 is, I don't really remember watching. I remember WrestleMania 28, so I remember watching that, and I remember watching Brock's comeback, so I think this is in that time period where Sky was charging for pay-per-view, so I don't think I saw the pay-per-view till a lot later on.
Yeah, they were all on pay-per-view at that point. I want to say from about 2008 that was the case.
Yeah, and to be fair, this is a great show, isn't it? Because this is the one with Brian Sheamus on it.
Yep, the match they didn't get at Mania, yep.
This is a great pay-per-view.
Punk Jericho and a street fight on this one as well.
Punk Jericho, yeah, that was really good as well.
That's really good. For the first time in 2015 was an experience. It is a great show.
And the Cena family there, front row.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
As we record this yesterday, I believe.
Cena's hairline is doing something very strange in this. It almost looks like he had brain surgery or something. And he has like a giant scar, but I think it's just his hairline. And this is, I mean, still, he's still pretty spry here, John Cena, in 2012.
Three hairlines, I think he's got there, actually.
Yeah, he's got like three hairlines.
I love that Brock's wearing, I know he still does it today, but I love the fact he's got UFC shorts on. He's just not bothered. Yeah.
Even if he didn't fucking care, would he?
What a dick on the table.
Are you going to tell him not to wear them? I didn't think so.
No, funnily enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that really kind of doesn't get remarked on. Just everybody knows, like, Brock gets pretty preferential treatment, but just how he does not play along with their bullshit whatsoever, and can get away with it. Like I said, who's going to tell him no? Brought him back. This is a comeback match. What are you going to? Well, you're not dressed appropriately, so I guess we can't have a match.
Bleeding already 30 seconds into the match.
Jeez. Yeah.
The sign in the crowd there. Legitimacy has returned.
Wow.
Do you remember that role when he did come back? That crowd was like 20 to 40 year old men absolutely acting like they were at a Justin Bieber concert.
not been to many Justin Bieber concerts.
Well, you know the point I'm making about the whole, like, they were basically acting like teenage girls because Brock was back.
Was that the origin of Brock Lesnar guy with the marking out the famous gift?
Yes. Oh, here comes the trainer in to check up on Cena.
I remember this match had blood, right? I remember it's very physical, unlike other main event Cena style matches, but like, I don't remember any of this stuff with God. I mean, they are really doing the hard sell here.
It's this elbow here in the replay of the show. Yep. There it is.
Holy shit.
No, that's hard. You can actually see Cena trying to tell him to stop there, but good luck with that.
Jeez. That's as hard way as hard way gets.
Didn't tell him again. Thought better of it the second time around. You know what? He's just trying to tell him there, and that's the answer he gets. And again.
Yeah.
It's like Vader and Shamrock. Ease up, pal. Ease up.
Enough.
Mate. And they're just showing it over and over. They're like, oh. All right, we know we've struck gold here. Keep showing it from every angle. Sometimes when you do that, it's very business exposing, but it just looks better and better this time around. Or here worse and worse.
Exposing, so we're okay. Jesus Christ, that is relentless, man.
Yeah, this... Oh, jeez.
Do you remember the one he caught? He didn't catch Strowman. He knew exactly what he was doing. But remember, was it the Royal Rumble a couple of years back?
Rumble Strowman.
Yeah, and Strowman hit him a bit too hard for his liking, and he comes back and he absolutely leathers him on the side of the head. They did the same. They kept showing that on replay after replay as well. Guy just doesn't care. It's wonderful.
He's just been completely brained at this point.
Brock going full red face already.
We're not even 5 minutes in at this point. You know, this is how you do the proverbial Broadway sell after 5 minutes.
Holy look at it.
This is worse than I remember in a good way.
Me too, same. Like some of it's kind of coming back to me, but just the brutality is like, this is insane.
I don't know how much of this is actually selling and how much is actually CTE.
Right. God, you don't want to think about some ways. And so this is all right, so this is coming off of Cena's first match with The Rock, right, at WrestleMania. His this is his year of hell where he goes on like a winning streak. That's the worst year of his life.
The year of hell when he's in every main event going.
Right. It doesn't lose a match.
Yeah. I remember people, like, I didn't see much of it obviously at the time, but I remember people bitching about that. I mean, with good reason. But, yeah, that's, you know, it took us a while to, I think, appreciate what we lost with John Cena, right? He waited late in his career to really win me over, I think. But at this point, he's just the perfect person for this kind of comeback for Brock.
There goes Chuck. Oh, definitely. Taylor, mate. Oh, it wipes it out again.
Yeah, Robinson. Charles Robinson really took a tumble there.
He got that one.
I'm amazed that mum and dad have kept them kids on the front row.
Yeah, Rumble 99, I'd say, maybe.
yes, you see Mick Foley's wife and children leaving out the back right now.
And Barry Blount is talking around this.
Well, yeah, just thinking seriously. So are we like 3 years into it when they've gone G-rated at this point? So, you know, this ain't marketing for kids, guys.
Yeah, close to four, right? I think that started in 2008.
Was it not when this went to HD?
Could be.
I remember Michaels and Jericho having kind of a bloodbath that wasn't totally cleared or something in advance that Vince was not happy with. This is by Jericho's recollection, I believe. And
yeah, that was the Unforgiven match.
Yeah. And I mean, not to say that that's what did it. They were going to go in that direction anyway, but that seemed to cause a pretty big stink at the time. But yeah, 2008.
Yeah, it was 2008. If you're going to go PG, and it has its critics, and I understand that, but if you do go PG, and a match like this does come along every so often, it has added impact.
It does.
Yeah.
There is definitely.
You're not seeing this sort of thing every month, even every week, as you were in 98 to 2000, or even a bit later than that. Now, that's a lot of the Ruthless Aggression stuff. Even the mid-2000s, there's a lot of matches, going back watching random pay-per-views from them. A lot more blood that doesn't need to be there, even then.
Brock's a true special attraction, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
In the truest sense of the phrase.
Well, and I guess at the time, the thinking was, we don't know how long we've got this guy back, so let's try to make the most of it. Like, he could bolt after this one match. He's Brock Lesnar. He might decide he, once again, doesn't want to play ball. And for all we know, we've got him for one night, so let's go for broke here.
God, Robinson did catch that frosh in the face, though.
I mean, this is more brutal than their SummerSlam match. And what, 2 years later, 2014? Which is just such a one-sided shit-kicking by Cena, and he loses. Like, it's a glorified squash, but he's had, like, no offense here. So, I mean, I know this is going to have a much different outcome, but in terms of just the sheer brutality and one-sidedness of it, this is, like, worse than that, way more egregious.
And it works that he's had no offense as well.
Mm-hmm.
Got the sound down here, but Cena gets proper deep-throated cheers towards the end of the match because it was we all know what happens 2 minutes later, spoilers, but just for a moment there. Oh, here we go. Oh, my life.
I will say that chain looks kind of comically large. Like, just... I mean, I know those exist, but it looks more like a prop than a legit.
It's hanging a little loose.
Yeah. So, jeez. Ugh.
Yow.
Stiff, stiff clotheslines.
What else is he going to do? He just needs to stand there and take it. Mm-hmm. What else is he going to do?
And Brock is just drenched, pouring. Not that red, comparatively speaking, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. It's 2012 red face. It's not quite the...
He's just very damp.
Yeah. He's not purple.
No, he's not purple.
We're not quite the Kool-Aid symbol just yet.
No, but he is very soggy.
Yeah. It's like he's blown up, but just pushing through it because he's, like, just that inhuman. Most guys that size, that condition, would not be able to do this. Imagine this was a Warlord versus John Cena match. You know? Putting Warlord over like this. He's just blown up in 2 minutes, can't move. Cena's just laying in the ring with a chain around his feet. Warlord's like, I'm fooled.
I like this, where Brock's just checking up on Robinson.
Yeah. I want to see if I actually killed him. It's been out for a minute.
Back to it.
Here we go.
See, that's how you do the Cena comeback there. Just a flurry there. Wiped out straight away.
Flurry cut it off, yeah.
Expert booking it. As much as a Cena fan I am in the ring.
That exchange looked very uncooperative too, where he Brock cuts it off, throws him into the steps. Like, I don't know that Cena was totally game for that.
I'd like to know how this one was laid out, if at all it was.
So Brock Powell, we want to do this. No.
Charles.
20 minutes. Done. Thank you. That was easy, wasn't
he? Charles Robinson is still, to this day, the best, the greatest Ric Flair impersonator you'll find, despite what Jennifer Smith will tell you about Charlotte Flair.
I'm going to tell her you said that.
We will not disrespect Charlotte while Tim is on the call.
Tell her you said that. It is remarkable how much she moves like her dad, though. Like, just her posture and just the way that she carries herself in the ring, it's very Ric Flair-like. Mm. Robinson getting wiped out.
Poor Charles.
I don't know why that was so funny, but
it should be as funny as it is.
I mean, I kind of had the same reaction.
Oh, you know how you were talking about the Angle Austin match where all the referees get taken out right at the end. I much prefer. I don't mind that finish, but I'm much preferring this one where Brock just takes them all out.
Yeah, it's not like he's deliberately trying to get disqualified. It's just he's you get near him, he's just a fucking tornado, right?
He is these two on the refs. Like, what are they gonna do? They're like the two evil henchmen. They gonna do?
There's a referee in the back who's desperate to make his pay-per-view debut, and he's like, right, pal, you're gonna be the one to stand up to Lesnar. Ah, not a chance. I'll see you tomorrow night.
And the fans are just in awe. Like, it's
That's a corking visual, that is. That's brilliantly shot as well. And that one. Cena giving it, but you can't see me. Tremendous camera work there. And direction. Honestly.
Well done, Mr. John.
Rory is giving Kevin Dunn a compliment.
Yeah,
this is where we are, everybody.
Well done, Kevin.
Submit it for Oscar contention.
Thanks for playing.
All of Cena's hairlines just drenched in blood here. All three of them.
So, would this visual of John Cena be better with all his hairlines and an American Nightmare tattoo on the side of his neck?
Oh, God! How dare you! Now, look. Listen, I think that John Cena would be much more appropriate for him to have a trashy neck tattoo than a formerly handsome individual such as Cody Rhodes.
Are you not liking his new emo look where he's gone back to the dyed hair? It really accentuates how bad that tattoo is. I mean,
you're just polishing a turd at this point, dude. It's too little, too late.
I mean, you actually told him that was a good idea.
I didn't tell him that.
Yeah, I'd like to think Brandy would have been at home and gone, no, no, no.
Yeah.
I would like, I'm 99% sure that Brandy did not know he was going to go and do that.
I thought it was a rib. I told him, if you do this, we're through. And I thought it was just a rib. It was temporary, but, well, our marriage was temporary.
What if it was Sammy that was egging him on to get him out of the picture?
Well, you know, all's fair in love and war, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah, we haven't talked about it, but, you know, we don't talk much. This is a great match. What are we doing?
Wasting time. I do like that Cena, when he went to the top rope there, actually missed the steps completely. I'm not convinced he was necessarily meant to. But I think it worked that he
true.
Did. I think
yeah.
he was meant to crash off them, but the fact he missed them was a bit of a happy accident, really. To say, I'm yeah. so fucked here, I couldn't even make it that far.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God.
Even Luck was with him, didn't he? Oh, my God almighty.
Oh.
That is worth $6 million a year, Lesnar. Okay, now.
A man that size should not do such things.
Wow.
Cena's probably over there praying that he can't keep going.
This is going to be the weakness now. The cell's there.
He's happy enough.
I'm getting the cap.
Like I didn't blow my knee out. Okay.
I've got the captions on. It says I think he hurt his knee. Oh, no shit, Sherlock. Do you not just
you
see?
Think so?
Do you not just see what he just did?
Wow. Yeah, I don't feel like we've lost anything here with having the commentary muted.
Yeah, Cole and King in 2012, just excruciating.
That's not by the time that they had Booker on with them as well.
Oh, it could be.
This match right in his Fab Five.
Yeah, I think this is pre-heart attack, so I think... Oh, there you go, yeah, Booker's there, I've just seen him.
Shucky-ducky. Oh, there he is.
I don't mind Chucky Ducky Quack Quack, but
I don't mind Booker on. You're not going to get anything serious out of him, but it's you never know what he's going to say next, and it's delightful.
Yep. Yeah, you don't. I mean, if you have Vince in his ear, then he isn't being listened to. Say Chucky Ducky Quack Quack again. I mean, I really
love that shit, Booker.
I don't see Vince in the booth shouting that.
Shucky ducky quack quack, bitch. for context, the good lady is in the room just now, and I've just shouted shucky ducky quack quack out of nowhere. she's got no idea what's happening.
Wow.
Hmm. He literally only got sort of two moves in, and that's been generous of calling the chain shot a move.
If technically, that wasn't a legal pin because his shoulders weren't technically on the mat. I'm taking that one up.
Yeah, it's not a false count anywhere, is it?
No, I wouldn't say so. I would take that up. So you know, this match is still going on. I would feel.
I wasn't sure how I felt about that finish at the time. On the one hand, when you get a good flash pin like that, it just sort of adds to the realism, right? Like it could end at any time. Like ideally, that's what a wrestling match is supposed to be. If you're going for that kind of suspension of disbelief, but you still just kind of want to see like an exciting sports entertainment wrestling finish with the hot finishing streak segment. And
this match was
so different, this match, that it just sort of, I don't know, it just felt like all bets were off.
Yeah. Like what should have happened next is Brock should now murder him after the pin. But obviously what was going on in the real world at the time, Cena had to stay conscious.
Yeah.
Is it just not one of these things that it's looked upon badly because of who was involved? Like anybody else, if it was...
if it's CM Punk, then everybody is creaming their hands.
It's got years of history. Some of it very unfairly poured on Cena's head, but years of history.
Mm-hmm.
Reputations are hard things to shake off, let's just say that. Yeah. I do wonder if live in the moment people were... Because that was Cena's first pin attempt. If people were actually, even then, with Cena going for it after an F5 onto the steps, expecting a Lesnar kick out, even then, I think some of them might want to be.
I
see both sides. I understand. I can, putting aside a lot of the anti-Cena bias, I can understand and I will listen to arguments as to why the wrong person possibly went over here.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just quick enough. He stunned Lesnar with the chain shot. He went, we've seen the replay here now. He goes for the cover quickly enough. I can take it. I see the issues, but I can take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the most egregious thing in the world, is it?
No, far from it.
And you could sort of kayfabe it away too, as like Brock punched himself out and just didn't have the stamina to kick out of something that normally he would have. He also wiped out on the outside, so he's hurt. He's trying to shake that off.
The way they're playing it here, it's not a case of Cena's won the match. Cena survived the match, hasn't he?
And you've got to think so as well. Kayfabing it. That is Brock's first match in, what would it have been, 8 years?
Yeah.
And Cena, and that move that he's just lost to Cena's beat everybody up and down the roster three times over with it. So you can even kayfabe it away that way as well.
Ring rust. Well, they also, I remember in the lead up to their SummerSlam match, they talked about this match and Brock's loss, and I think it was Heyman put it down to diverticulitis, which, I mean, was something he actually did endure. Prior, I think he's, you know, it's pretty much resolved by this point. But, you know, Heyman brings that up as a way to sort of not, like, excuse, but to explain what had happened here.
Was it because of that? Is that why he had to give up the UFC? Because he's...
It was, yeah.
Oh yeah, so you get it's plausible.
So this now with the promo. So I think I've got my years mixed up. Was it the year before where Bin Laden died and he announced it?
Oh yeah, that was
off air, wasn't it?
Yeah. So this is when he announces the break that doesn't happen.
That's right.
Amazing.
And, you know, he's fighting Big Johnny the month after.
The break that doesn't happen, the engagement, the wedding that doesn't happen, he does everything with pay-per-view, doesn't he? Never
well, didn't he didn't he like lose a match to Wade Barrett or something years before this, and had to be, he was, if he lost he was fired, he lost and he was fired for like 2 weeks or something. Was it even 2 weeks?
Yeah, it was Stingy. He was the ref when Barrett was facing Orton. I want to say it's Survivor. Oh, okay. Survivor Series 2010.
Was that the one where
it was the title versus Cena's career.
Uh-huh.
I think. And Cena was the ref, so he had basically, and this was when he's forced to be in the Nexus and stuff like that, right before the Nexus became shit.
Yeah. Because that was the pay-per-view, for him, if you can remember, where I can't remember which the order was, but Matt Stryker shouted out something and then he had to be corrected by Michael fucking Cole. That's how shit he was, Matt Stryker. Where you have to be corrected by Michael fucking Cole about something.
That is the worst year in company history, 2010.
Yeah, it's a bad one. That's why I at the time I knew, so that's why I turned off and stayed getting on 5 years. Yeah, 2010 was a bit of a nadir.
And if 2000 and if pay-per-view is meant to be where your good stuff's happening,
yeah,
God bless JT and Aaron for going through the TV. Boys, it's not too late to back out now. we'll just put that one down to a special. You're just a pilot, just trying it out. You can back out now. Nobody will blame you.
Cracking sign in the crowd there. I'm only booing Cena because I don't want my tires smashed.
Quality sign.
I hope he got his wish. Escape the show unscathed that night.
I think it might have been at this point where people that might have been a lot of people's sentiment. You're like, you think you like John Cena, but you don't know if you're allowed to or not.
It's sort of the angle sucks thing, right? Where that's just what you're supposed to do. It's just part of. Yeah, it's almost a Pavlovian response now. It's just a. Sometimes it's like these. I almost think they'd rather have, and they would rather have trained seals at this point than actual human fans in the crowd. Certainly, this year has been an interesting experiment in that. Maybe it's given them some ideas that this is the way to go. This is the future.
That's just a Thunderdome, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We can create our own crowd.
You might be onto something there.
Well,
that was excellent.
Yeah, I'm glad we did.
Great pick.
Yeah. Yeah, superb.
Better than I definitely better than I remembered, I would say. Oof.
Yeah, no, that was a roller coaster. So I think, given the roller coaster we've just been through, I think that's probably a good time to call it there, guys. What do you think?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
End on a high.
Absolutely. We will end on that high then. So thanks very much again, guys. It was very, very enjoyable. Tim, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, guys.
Do you have anything that you would like to plug to the good people listening?
I would just direct folks to the regular podcast that I do across a variety of podcast feeds. So we'll try to make this quick, okay? On the Place Me Nation Wrestling feed, you can find me on Talkin' WCW. That's a show I do with Jennifer Smith and Greg Phillips. And that's where we take a topic in WCW. Could be a wrestler, could be a concept, could be an event type potentially. And each of us, we have a representative of that concept. So coming up this on our most recent episode, which has not dropped yet, but you can look forward to soon, we're going to be talking three matches from the career of Vader, chosen by Jennifer Smith as her wrestler. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Also have PTB NXT again with Jenny and with our third man in the booth, Jacob Williams. And we are watching NXT chronologically from the network era. So we're in the year 2014. Just covered our first TakeOver event ever. So they did Arrival and then they did TakeOver. So we've made it through that first TakeOver, and we're going to be covering the fallout from that, some weekly television on the next edition of PTB NXT. On Jenny's own podcast feed, it's called The Jenny Position. The two of us have a show called Talkin' Pop, which is really just whatever we want it to be. We often have a guest and have sort of a guest interview, get to know this person. Other times it's just the two of us kind of vamping and not sure what our next episode is going to entail exactly. We've got really a smorgasbord of ideas. You'll know what it is when I know what it is. How about that? we also do on the Jenny Position, the Journey Through Infinity, watching all the films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're about at the halfway point there, Journey Through Infinity. That is myself, Jennifer Smith, with Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo. So we covered Avengers Age of Ultron, most recent episode of that. And I guess after that, we're going to be talking Ant-Man. So do look forward to that if you're a fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I made an appearance on Making Mount Rushmore on Place We Nation Pop. So I was a guest on that on the first episode of that. And yes, I think on the second episode, and I will be again on the fourth, which Ben, you may know a thing or two about that as well.
A little.
Yeah. So that's those are my podcasting interests, I guess you could say. Look for me on Twitter as well. I am at Cyke68, CYKE68. And that's all.
Wonderful. So you'll be able to hear plenty of Tim going forward, which is never a bad thing.
Never a bad thing.
Never a bad thing. If anyone does say it's a bad thing, I will fight you.
All right.
So, Ben, what have you got coming up? We already know that you may or may not know a thing or two about Making Mount Rushmore coming up.
I know a little bit about it. It was good fun, wasn't it? But I wouldn't listen if you're a fan of Julia Roberts or Sandra Bullock, because we're quite nasty towards them two ladies. But
you almost made me spit my drink. Sorry.
Latest episode of Chicken Salad, I don't think will be out by the time this pod comes out, but it's going to be Survivor Series 1999. That's what we're watching. I'll be on the latest Highway to the Impact Zone. It'll be me, Sean, Logan, and Jake. As well as that, and I will let the other chaps mention the other shows I'm on because I was on with both of them.
Excellent. Well, I'll pass the baton on to Rory then and see what he's got to say for himself going forward.
Okie doke. First off, everybody, thanks for having me on today's show, then off it, then back on it again. Duty calls and all that. But yes, what else have I got going on? Well, in this sphere, you can hear me on the Scene Your Video podcast every month, in which I and the guest look at a certain selection from the home video classics section of the esteemed WWE Network. Watch out for the next show dropping in about a week, 2 weeks' time. We've got a good archive of 7 or so shows for you to check out that I've done throughout the year. Mr. Locke and Mr. McDougall have been regular guests on that show, so do check those out. Outside of the sphere of Place to Be Nation, you can, of course, hear me on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, where, as the name suggests, we look at pro wrestling from 20 years ago, enigmatic to the last. We have shows dedicated to the WWF, the WCW, and ECW. A rolling review of presenters and guests there. We've been doing that show since August of 2013, so all the way from SummerSlam 93 right up to October 2000 and beyond. So wherever you get your podcasts, do have a look at that one. And also, I teamed up with Ben and Callum for 2 editions of The Great Debate here, where you can find us on PlayStation Nation, where we looked at pop culture, and I managed to talk about pop culture for an hour and a half without completely falling on my arse, and this thing called pro wrestling that you may have heard of as well. So do check those out. Expertly held together by one Andy Atherton.
Lovely stuff. And obviously, coming out of the time period we are, you'll be getting quite busy, I think, on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago front. Couple of things probably happen at the turn of the year that might be of interest to you. But though I echo the sentiments of Rory there, to saying that the couple of Great Debate episodes on the both of the feeds were fantastic to do. Andy's a trooper for pulling them all together, and they were great fun to do. So hopefully that comes across when you listen to them. For myself, we are just released the latest episode of NWA Crock and Roll. We looked at the July 1985 TV as well as the Great American Bash and all its clipped glory on the PWI tape. So it was excellent. It was an excellent tag title match on there as well. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it is the Rock and Roll Express against the Russians from July 13th, 1985. If you haven't seen that, I would go out your way to have a look at it, because it is certainly now guaranteed to be on my GWCW list at the end of the year. Other than that, depending on when this goes out, the boys will be able to tell me better than I can remember. You may have already been involved in the live watch that we were going to do of Hell in a Cell. This is hopefully going to be a regular thing over on the Twitch, the new Twitch channel and the new YouTube channel. So keep an eye out on there. Subscribe, like, everything on those. Just search Place to Be Nation. You won't go wrong on either of those feeds. But other than that, I think it's time to say goodbye. Another excellent episode. So thanks again to Tim for taking the time out of his Sunday to do this with us. So thank you very much, Tim.
Anytime.
I'll hold you to that, because I'm sure there will be a next time for that. But until Please, that next
it's
time.
It's a joy.
But until that next time, thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you next month.
But I'm off to find the clunge.